Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. The preseason wraps up this week for the Browns and Bengals. All 32 teams must have their rosters to 53 by 6 o'clock Sunday. Cleveland's going to wrap preseason play Thursday night hosting New England. Browns head coach Todd Monken expects to name a starting quarterback sometime today. It's between Deshaun Watson and Shador Sanders. Neither will play in Cleveland's preseason finale Thursday, but the Browns open the regular season on the road Sunday, September 13th in Jacksonville. As for the Bengals, Cincinnati looks for a perfect preseason in Philadelphia on Friday. In college football, week zero begins Saturday with TCU and North Carolina playing in Ireland. Ohio State's back to practice this morning. They'll have seven captains for the first time since 2020. Ryan Day is going to speak with the media after practice this morning. OSU is going to host Ball State next Saturday at 12:30. This update is sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co., locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com and make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Isaiah in for Bake today. Reese is back. We'll get into that shortly as well. 9:30, the Browns allegedly going to make a quarterback decision today. We'll see what the timetable of that looks like. And quite honestly, if a decision should have already been made up after what we saw on Saturday, we'll blitz the weekend coming up at 10. Austin Ward stops by at 10:30, as is customary on a Monday. And two-a-days continues. We close out the NFC North. We will do the Packers and the Vikings today as we continue our tour around the National Football League. This should have been week zero. Should have been week zero. This weekend should have been. It was sitting there. It's ripe for the taking. I understand that for whatever reason, the calendar's a little off. Those damn Romans. Calendar's a little off this year, and so things are backed up a little bit. And understanding that the NFL doesn't start till September 12th, understanding that college football in earnest doesn't start for two more weeks, this should have been week zero. We should be going into Buckeyes at home this Saturday. That's the way that it should have been. Then they should have played the games that are scheduled for this Saturday, this weekend. And then all of a sudden, kids, what do you have? You start to have a little bit of calendar that makes sense. And I do think, and there's a lot to get to, we've got guys in NFL camps that are repurposing themselves in college because they're going to make more money playing another season of collegiate football. We have that happening. We've got the SCORE Act and all of these other things that they're trying to get right. And there's a simple layup here that would help some of it. And that is just starting this thing a week earlier. That's just an easy thing to do that gets this a little more breathing room by the time you get to December and January. And then selfishly, I needed it. There wasn't really a whole lot. There was a constant. I really enjoyed our Friday night lights. Nice win for the Explorers, and that was great. But from the standpoint of what you're doing on a weekend, it was ripe for the taking. College football was there for it. We did have some news on the college football side this weekend. The Buckeyes going with seven football captains this year. This was an Urban thing. Urban did this a lot. He would have big captain rooms. You have this in the prep here, Reese. Ohio State had seven captains from 15 to 20. For the longest time, it was three or four was kind of the way that it was. And that made it kind of special. I'm not going to make a big deal about it. You want to do seven. It's fine. To me, the sweet spot's like four. That's what it should be. But I understand. I'm sure there's hurt feelings. You have a bunch of guys who are kind of worthy. And, you know, the other thing is you're going to have a bunch of guys who have been here a long time juxtaposed to guys who have been here a relatively recent amount of time, but have put their absolute stamp on the program. If I had to pick the two guys of this list, and the list of seven include Brandon Ennis, who Reese, when you and I talked to him, that was abundantly clear at camp that guy was going to have a C. Also that he was going to wear the Blocko. I think we may have said it. Did we say it when he got off?
Yeah, like, there's your blocko.
That's your blocko. I think you said that. I think you said exactly that. There's your blocko, and it was Brandon. So, and he got it this weekend, and that made all the sense of the world. So that's a no-brainer. Saraville, get it totally. Jeremiah in his third and final year here. Okay, fine, get it. McLean absolutely came back. Kenyatta, okay, we'll see. Like, is the leadership there? To me, when I think about the two that elevated to this point relatively quickly and probably needed to happen, Julian saying on the offensive side, the idea that he was voted a captain by his teammates tells you how far he's come in a year, because he was really quiet a year ago. Now, he's in a quarterback competition with Lincoln, and how much of an opinion can you have? How loud can you be when you're fighting for things? But what that tells me is that Julian spent this offseason not just with Mickey Marotti in the weight room, but also grabbing a hold of this team by the throat and the program by the throat. So that was a very positive sign to me. And then the other side of the ball was Peyton Pierce. He was in a rather large double shadow a year ago with Sonny and Arvell, but we noticed him. We noticed him. And if you're a loyal listener of this show, you know how much Threes loved him going all the way back to the recruiting process. So the fact that not only is he a captain, but he had the most votes, saw 11 Warriors with others that he had the most votes to be a captain, that tells you where some of that leadership is going to be. So I was thrilled with the guys who are listed. I think Julian and Peyton are the two that jump out to me in terms of, okay, ready to take on a big role. Julian having fought off a challenge a year ago, wins that job, and now taking a more vocal kind of turn with this team. And then Peyton Pierce, who was, you know, the third linebacker a year ago and is now elevated to leader of the defense. I think those things are very positive signs for this Buckeye football team, still 2 weeks before their opener, Reese.
Yeah, I took it on Saturday after that scrimmage and saw the seven captains. And I kind of felt the same way that about senior day. I'm like, well, that seems a little bit too much. But If the votes kind of dictated that you needed to have seven captains, roll with it. I mean, that 2015 through 2020 stretch for Ohio State football is pretty damn good.
It was good.
So they had seven captains through that stretch. Okay. Fine. Yeah. If it's fine by the team, it's totally fine by me. That was weird in the update. I don't know how much of it everybody heard, but thinking about Ohio State next week, going against Ball State, but thinking The exact same thing. Like, you had a real great opportunity, college football.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
It's so weird. And what is it? It's because there's an extra week this year in the calendar. Is that what it is?
Yeah, August is weird.
August is weird this year, and so that's it. But, like, good Lord, this was the weekend you should have debuted. Go this weekend with week zero. We should be playing Ball State Saturday. There's no reason to wait a whole nother week to get this thing done. Obviously, the calendar's different, but this is the weekend you need to start it. I don't know what more evidence that you need. There's plenty of time. Get 2 weeks in before the NFL even begins. 2 weeks of your season, man.
I think once they expand the playoff, I think that's the one of the things of the many things chaotic that you had mentioned over the weekend with college football, athletics, college football in particular. I think once the playoffs are expanded, they'll look to monopolize a little bit more of August.
They need to.
You can't do more you can't actually do more of January. And then you will not do any of February. This the most logical thing. Like, that's the only bit of positive I can take from an expanded college football playoff. Maybe they'll look on the calendar a little bit better.
Even that comment, real quick, Isaiah, that was even that thing that we saw with the that was like the one positive of the bill, was that it was not going to allow the season to go past like January 8th. So, that's like the one positive. Our small victories, if we can take them. Go ahead, Isaiah.
Yeah, it feels like if they do expand the playoff, it's forcing their hand. It should be one fell swoop of, we're going to expand the playoff. The season's going to have to get moved up because the calendar will make absolutely no sense if we don't do it that way. And then as far as for the captains go, if you have seven people that are worthy of being a captain, then make them all captains. Because at the end of the day, does it really matter that much, like, who the captains are in the grand scheme of things? I don't think it matters as much as we probably put out there, but this will matter for the guys 5-10 years from now that they were a captain. If they felt that, if Ryan Day feels that Peyton Pierce deserves to be a captain, then make him a darn captain. And 5 years from now, that'll be something that he'll remember. And if you ask any Buckeye fan who the captains were 4 seasons ago, maybe they get one of them. They probably won't get all four.
You're right on the last part, for sure. The one thing that I think it does water down a little bit, he's going into the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. He's an all-timer. But I think JT Barrett was like a four-time captain. And that's kind of crazy. I'm pretty sure he was. No, three-time. He was a three-time captain. He was three because he got it redshirt sophomore year when Cardale won the job. And then they made – so Cardale was a starting quarterback and JT Barrett was a captain coming out of JT Barrett's redshirt freshman year. So he was a three-time captain. So that's the only thing that gets a little tricky here. In this instance, you're not going to have that because the guys who are captains this year, I see no scenario where Julian Sain is here. He might be here one more year at best. But even that, I think, is up in question. Obviously, as much as we'd love to have Jeremiah back, and I'm sure we'd love to get the collectives in order to try to get him a number that would make him stay, I think it's safe to say that Jeremiah Smith is going to be in the National Football League next year with a probably top three pick designation, depending on how the quarterbacks fall. How's the ring fit, Reese? How you doing with
it? Boy, I've been fidgeting with this thing since Thursday. We did, and I would recommend a courthouse wedding to anybody. It was a 10-minute ceremony, and I don't remember a damn thing she said. It went well. Like it was great.
How did you know?
It was prompt. We were in it out. Like the most time we spent at the Franklin County Courthouse was figuring out which floor we had to get the marriage appendices, which are the things if you want to get a loan, you got to make sure you have just an extra piece of paper that says yes. In fact, we are married. So we bought ten of them, just because. We'll have more in the Weekend Blitz about how Thursday and Friday went, but yeah, I've been fidgeting with this day. It's a silicone ring. I've been fidgeting with the thing since Thursday.
You will fidget with it for probably a month, and then it just becomes part of your finger. And mine has been off. It's funny. It was actually fell off yesterday at lunch. So I don't know what that was all about, but I don't think it's been off. And if it's off for anything, it feels awkward if I don't have it. But for about the first month, all I did was monkey with it nonstop. So look forward to that in the Weekend Blitz. Further details. Congratulations, my friend. And that, sorry, ladies, heartbreaking moment. Reese off.
Had to officially happen. 36 years. Like, all right, it's time.
It's time. You walk around like Chris Pine long enough, and surely someone's going to wrap you up. So he's off the market, ladies. I'm sorry about all of that. Apparently, college football players who play in the NFL are not off the market. And what happened over the weekend led to one of the funniest back and forths from Todd Monken or any NFL coach, and also led to potentially a floodgate of more to come. We will get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on the
Your favorite fan shows are available as a podcast. What a concept. And don't miss exclusive podcast content like Austin and Burr. Listen on your schedule from anywhere in the world. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
It is a nice, cool start to the day out there, and all that sunshine boosts us to a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Just some passing fair weather clouds today. We'll have a northwest breeze of 5 to 15. For your Tuesday, starting off in the mid-50s, upper 70s for a high with a mostly sunny sky once again. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcast. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Find us on YouTube. Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
Homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with the Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. This is a quote from Greg Sankey back in May. People have to want to be governed. That's Greg Sankey back in May. He's got a coach at LSU that has no interest in it. Absolutely none. So Adam Schefter, the first to report this on Sunday, that the Browns waived tight end Daquan Wright. And if he clears waivers, he has an agreement in place for the 2026 season to play for, you guessed it, LSU. This per his agent, Drew Rosenhaus and Kyle Lincoln. Wright is believed to be the first player who could play for an NFL team and then go back to college. Todd Monken was asked about this post-game Saturday, among other things, post-game Saturday, which we'll get to in about 10 minutes, but was asked about this and had a very interesting exchange on how this all went down.
Man, it's crazy. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, as far as I know, he's had a medical issue that wasn't allowing him to practice. That's a medical, issue. It's nothing to do with me, you know. And then, then he was cleared, so we dressed him just in case we had to have him. But when you don't rep, it's hard to put him on the field. JT was out there, so we didn't want to get Blake hurt, and he's only been with us a week, and we had a number of things where Browns hurt Browns, and which to the naked eye you won't see, but we had a number of things that way when you're putting in guys that haven't really been there, and some of that's true, and some of it, you know, isn't good enough from us as coaches once they go out there. But, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, I wondered why Lane Kiffin reached out a week ago. Now I know. I mean, I didn't know. Now I know. I didn't call him back. Now I guess I should have.
So, yeah, it is crazy. The reason that this happened is the ruling and then an injunction and then a ruling on top of it. Here's the crib notes. The NCAA goes to court, they lose. So this is part of the NCAA's new 5-to-play-5 rule. And so there are going to be, I mean, this is the first one of these, but that my hunch is there will be more and potentially the floodgates will open on this. A bunch of guys who played 4 years of college football who are going to go get their fifth year. Now, the interesting caveat to this one is Daquan Wright played at Ole Miss. The SEC has a rule, the league has a rule, that you cannot transfer from one SEC team to another without having to sit. LSU said, hold our beer. We're not taking somebody from Ole Miss directly to LSU. In fact, we're not doing that at all. In fact, we're taking a guy who was in the NFL and putting him back to LSU. And by the way, this isn't the only player that LSU is trying to pull this off with. There's three other guys from Ole Miss that are in a similar boat from last year that they're going to try to do this with as well. I don't know what Lane is doing. I was just about ready to say, I don't know what Lane is doing from a roster standpoint. I don't know what he's doing from a financial standpoint to make all of this work. But the reality is it doesn't matter. None of it matters. There's no rules to any of it. So this kid's going to play. He's going to play. All these other guys are going to play. It's August 24th. What course of action does collegiate football have? Forget the NCAA. The only way that you could do it is it goes back to the Sankey line of people have to want to be governed. Like you all kind of have to play by the same rules, right? If we don't play by the rules, then you're going to have anarchy, and that's what you have right now. And of course, it would be Lane Kiffin who would be the one to press this. Like who else out of central casting would be the one to try to press this rule? And so this is LSU going as big as they can in year one with Kiffin. It's as simple as that. And they're going to push every ounce and bend every ounce of every rule that they have to get the things that they want, Reese.
The only way you can fix the issues in college football is by the coaches banding together and saying there are rules here and we are going to follow them. When you have outliers or you have rebels or renegades like Lane Kiffin, then nothing can really be done. Because as long as there's a guy like Lane Kiffin that's willing to push and bend and do whatever it takes. I mean, he landed a Notre Dame defensive end right on Friday, was, you know, had exhausted his 4 years. He said, well, I'm going to go play a fifth year at LSU. Mm-hmm. The state of Louisiana is backing Lane Kiffin on this.
Yeah.
So you want to go judge shopping? Well, you can do it there. It's interesting, you know, with the triumvirate of coaches that LSU has, like Mulkey, Will Wade, they'd all do the same thing. And it's one of those things to where you can ask for all the federal guardrails. You can ask for anything outside of the coaches coming together and saying, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're not going to do. And we are going to police ourselves. Nothing's ever going to get done with this. On Saturday, it was Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks had a scrimmage. And then Lanning was actually asked about this specific issue.
I think there's a lot of negatives that are involved around this. One, once you go to the NFL, to me, you're in the NFL. You don't get the opportunity to come back. Two, you know, most of us have built our rosters and you have a limited roster limit now. So if you invited somebody back to your team, that means you're kicking somebody else off your team, right, to match your roster limits. I don't think that's fair to the players that worked all summer, all spring, and put themselves in position to be ready to work for a team, you know, to have somebody come back. But ultimately, you know, it used to be once you had an agent or once you went and did the combine or once you went to mini, I mean, all those things qualified as you are no longer an amateur, you're a professional now once you declare for the draft. So to let any of those players come back, you know, fair or unfair to them, it's unfair to the sport. And I think it's unfair to the players that are on current teams, you know, for those guys to be coming back.
So unless you have all 136 FBS coaches singing that same song, good luck with anything else.
Even that, though, like Lanning's talking about you were an amateur. What's he paying Dante Moore?
Well,
I mean, once you make $6 million a year, you're probably no longer an amateur, aren't you? I mean, at that point, this is professional sports. Like, they want amateur when it fits their narrative, but not in practice. The other thing that I thought was hilarious is Lanning talked about roster limits. Why? What do we need roster limits for? Just pay him. You can only have so many guys on scholarship. Just pay him as walk-ons. I mean, that's the way around the scholarship. That's not hard. We'll pay your school, and we'll pay you on top of it. Like, that's not going to be a problem at all. The thing you said before you tossed to Lanning, though, that I wanted to come back to, and I think it was the right line, it's judge shopping. This is a state court in Louisiana that had a ruling on Thursday that's going to benefit the State University of Louisiana tremendously. Well, of course they are. Who's his constituents? So if you are college football, how many are you going to fight? 50 lawsuits? You're going to go try to appeal 50 different rulings around the country? Obviously, probably not going to have to worry about it in a place like Maine. But so let's say there's 25 states that have major college football and major college basketball that they want to take advantage of this, and they want to go down this rule. All they need is a state judge, and then you got to go try to get an appeal. Good luck. Who's paying for all that? I mean, it's so repetitive. It's pro sports. Give them contracts, collectively bargain it, then this stuff stops. But they keep finding these loopholes, Isaiah. It's time after time after time. They lose over and over again.
And it feels like there's nothing that if someone is willing to put effort into to fight, that it can't go through. Like, at this point, it feels like any argument, like, I wouldn't be surprised tomorrow if any rule could just be tossed aside for a new ruling, you know, by a judge. It feels like every day there's something new that we hadn't even considered. Like, had anybody considered 2 months ago that we'd be having NFL players playing college football? Like, no, that hadn't even crossed my mind because nobody was pressed enough to make it happen. And who's to blame here? Like, I can't blame the players. I can't blame Daquan Wright, because if this is an opportunity for him, who am I to say that if they're going to allow him to come back and play, that he shouldn't be able to come back and play? And for Lane Kiffin, like, I want the coaches all to band together, and I want them to do that. But as long as there's one bad egg, like, that's who he's competing with. Like, these guys operate under so much pressure that it's like, what lengths are you willing to go to try to win? And if one coach is willing to go a little bit farther, then it just pushes everyone alongside of them. Everybody has to just take an inch further because they don't want to fall behind, because this is competitive. Like, everybody is fighting to keep their jobs every single year. And so for Lane Kiffin, like, yes, he's willing to go further, but if he wasn't, then does he get canned? That's how it goes.
No, and even go back to Sorsby this summer. Remember, they found a judge for that one. And it wasn't a ruling or an injunction that stopped Sorsby from playing for Texas Tech. It was the conferences saying, we're not going to play him. I mean, that's what it was. So when it came to gambling, they banded together and said, yeah, we're not having it. But this, they can't. They couldn't even go 2 days. I mean, this started happening on Friday. The ruling happened Thursday, and on Friday, Kiffin's got fifth-year guys coming in, baby. Let's roll. I mean, it is what it is. And it's one of those things where there's a great, I don't know why this jumped into my line. I guess the jumped into my head. There's a great and very famous NASCAR line: if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I used to apply that to the Southeastern Conference. You ain't cheating, you ain't trying. There's a great image of Dale Earnhardt Sr., the late, great Dale Earnhardt Sr., and there's a photograph of him with his left toe slightly pressed up against the front of his car, lifting it ever so slightly. Why did he do that? To make it seem like the car weighed less than it was supposed to. Right? I mean, that's the reason he was doing that. And the reason that they do those things was to find any edge they could. And I'm convinced that a lot of these places have people that just look for loopholes. And LSU right now is at the top of the list of the people who do this. They are loophole hunting at LSU, and they're going to find a way around a lot of things. They are Darth Vader for this year, at least. It feels like in men's basketball, men's football, women's basketball, all of it, they are Darth Vader of college football and college athletics this year. The Browns are going to make a quarterback decision today. My hunch is it happens sometimes around noon. Did what happened Saturday have an impact on Todd Monken's decision? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Well, my hunch is you're going to get an answer this afternoon, and I should say not just my hunch, but also according to about a billion reports, you're getting an answer sometime this afternoon on who the Browns will start at quarterback week one down in Jacksonville at quarterback. Reese, you were doing something pretty important on Thursday. You were getting married, and so you missed some of the comments that I had following the joint practice with the Bills, which happened on Thursday, on a day that I felt was probably the biggest day. That was probably the day you were most looking forward to see, like, kind of how things would go at the quarterback position up there. Todd Monken on Thursday split those reps evenly right down the middle. I thought Watson had the better day, and I think he's by and large had the better training camp than Shadur has had. And so coming out of Thursday, I thought, well, it'll probably be Deshaun Watson will be the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. That's kind of the way it's been going all offseason. He had a really good spring and early summer and has been the more consistent, better player throughout camp. Although Shadur has come a long ways and has really had a nice camp himself, especially the last week or so. Then they played the preseason game on Saturday, a game that Shadur Sanders started in, and Shadur Sanders got the entire first half. He was 9 of 11, had some moments certainly, and played pretty well. Had the one pick, but it was a little bit behind and tipped a little bit. Okay, fine, we'll live with it. No big deal. And then they put Deshaun Watson in the third quarter, and it did not go well. He didn't play particularly well at all. And then beyond that, he was booed every time he came off the field, rather loudly. Now, it wasn't a full-throated 70,000 or anything like that, but he was definitely booed coming off of the field. Post-game, Deshaun Watson, I guess, should we do this in order? Because I think the order of this...
So did Todd went Monken first. Go before his quarterback?
He did. He went first, and then Deshaun went afterwards. So let's start with Todd Monken was asked about Deshaun Watson getting booed. Here's what he had to say.
Hey, how's it feel to get booed? It's a pretty easy question. It sucks. I don't want to get booed. It comes with the territory. You don't want to get booed? Let's play good football. Let's play good at quarterback. Let's play good on offense. Let's play good as a team. And then you don't have to worry about all that because it can turn just like that. Win, play good football, and everybody will be fine. That's just part of it. I mean, so I told him, you good? We're good. Part of what we do.
So that was Todd Monken. Again, he went first. Deshaun Watson went second, and then he was asked about getting booed by the fans in Cleveland. Here was what he had to say.
I think you guys know, too, and I think the whole world knows. It has nothing to do about the performance. It's a little bit personal than that, so I think that's it's a disrespectful thing. I'm going to keep whatever I feel with me and my family internally on how I feel about that. Just move on.
So then he was asked, Deshaun was asked, could he overcome the negativity? Here's what he had to say about that.
I don't know. You know, it's a mental battle every day. You know, I feel like I get more love on road games than I do home games. So if it is my spot and he does make me the name, maybe it's 17 away games then. I don't know.
It's a pretty illuminating look into the mind of Deshaun Watson there. He also mentioned something that happened 2 years ago, the last time he played on the field up in Cleveland.
Last time I played on this field, I tore my Achilles. And that same fan base, they cheered when I got hurt. So does that have to do with anything about performance? When a person get hurt, especially for your own city, and they cheer.
Tough one. So Todd Monken was available Sunday, as he is all throughout the preseason and has been all throughout the preseason. He was asked for his reaction to Watson's presser on Saturday. Here's what the Browns coach had to say.
Well, I'll go backwards, forwards. I'm not concerned about the first home game. I'm concerned about who gives us the best chance to win first week. We'll get to that when we get to it. My reaction was a young man who's worked awfully hard to get back to where he is now. And he wants to, in the worst way, play winning football for the Browns organization and the fans. And it didn't go as we had hoped, or he did, I'm sure. And I think we have to be a little bit careful of judging someone right after going out there to play, feeling like he's put in the work, and then to not perform as well as he would have wanted. And like I said, we all want to be appreciated. And he spoke from the heart. And I don't ever blame someone that speaks from the heart. And if someone would say, well, do you feel like he doesn't have confidence? I don't see that. I don't see that every day. I see a young man that has confidence, and he wanted to perform in the worst way at a high level.
Should Saturday have an impact on the decision Todd Monken is going to make public sometime this afternoon?
Emotionally, as a Browns fan, I think yes. I think there's no way, again, this is Browns fan, Eric, that he should start for the Cleveland Browns ever again. I hear Watson's comments and I go, well, that's T-Bone and Tyvus have the great loser talk drop, and everything that Deshaun said, that was just loser talk and loser mentality. And how can he lead a locker room? How can he lead a team as a quarterback talking like that about the fan base? And I think, again, doing this as a Browns fan, there's just no way, Todd, that you can put that out there as your starting quarterback, as one of 32, especially with your first game as head coach, how long you've waited for this opportunity, and that's the guy you're going to throw out there, that kind of that the attitude that he's got goes against everything I've ever heard from football guys. But, this is a big but, if he's practiced better than Shador, and his overall body of work through camp's been better than Shador, then I think you have to go with that. Who's had the better overall camp? Yes, Saturday was really bad for Watson.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good for Shador. How is that averaged out through camp, through these through those two preseason games? Because they're not playing Thursday. He's going to start Dylan Gabriel, and then Taylen Green's going to get the second half. But who's looked the best in that body of work? I think you do have to take your emotions out of it when it's a decision like this. At least that's what I think Monken's going to do.
And for Browns fans, it's hard because you're just seeing, we're seeing two preseason games where Monken's been watching these guys every day for months now. And so we're seeing like 10% of the competition. And the other part that makes this so difficult for Monken is he probably throughout this summer saw pieces of Deshaun where he was like, ooh, I can work with that. Like I can make that happen this year. But the one thing that he couldn't really put into the competition was just how mentally broken Deshaun was by the boos of the preseason game. Like in that press conference, that was the one part of the competition that Monken just, you can't put like a number to that. Like you can't put an attempt to that. That's just something that completely rattled him during the game. And it was clear that during that third quarter, that surely wasn't the player that he's been excited for the entire summertime. And so now Todd probably woke up on Sunday morning with a pit in his stomach thinking, is the guy that I've seen practice going to be able to do what he's done at practice in a game? And so the trust that he's built over the summertime, a lot of it got lost on Saturday because, hey, is he going to be able to mentally get through this? Yeah. Or do we need to go a different direction? The first two games are away, which honestly helps Cleveland because Deshaun is much more comfortable on the road than he is at home. And so that would be the only thing that probably makes Todd feel good this morning. But he has to have a pit in his stomach thinking that Deshaun could be the starter.
Yeah, I've said, you know, kind of all along that if it's close, you go with Shador because it makes all the sense organizationally in the world to start a fifth round pick who's under team control, who's got a manageable salary. If Shador hits, he's a lottery ticket. I've said it a million times. If he hits, then you have two first round picks next year and you can trade out of the top. And if you are picking at the top, you can trade out of it. You can pick position players. You can add depth. I mean, it's a game changer when you have, ask the 49ers. You get a quarterback in a late round that's under team control at a minimal salary. That's the best way you can possibly build something. So if it's close, I think you go with Shador and you go from there. I did, you know, and coming out of Thursday, and I know this was the plan all along, and Todd is a man of his word. Coming out of Thursday, I was surprised. I was curious if they would rethink the plan for the rotation Saturday, because I didn't know if Deshaun playing in the third quarter with threes against three, like I didn't know what the upside of that was based on what I saw Thursday with the two quarterbacks. So I was curious if they would alter the plan and give, you know, Shador the entire first half and then go Dylan and Taylen in the second half and kind of go from there. But once you put him out there, then all of this becomes possible, right? And so this is going to be very fascinating in a couple hours or thereabouts, what Todd decides to do. And then the reality is that what Todd said in his answer, that's the answer. His first answer when he said, how do you think it feels? I don't like being booed, but it's performance-based, and I got to be better. If I play better, they won't boo. I mean, that's the answer. Todd gave the answer. That's That's what I love about Munkin. Like, he tells you the real truth. That's how you answer that question. Is exactly how Todd answered it. How do you think it feels? It stinks. You know, I played golf with the boys, with Beamsy and some of his buddies. He goes, Dad, are you embarrassed when you don't play well? Yeah, it sucks, man. Of course I am. It stinks. Nobody wants to suck. It's not fun. So that's the way that you probably answered it. And he unloaded, I think, a lot of emotional baggage in that interview. And I'll be interested to see if they do go with him. I'll be interested to see, because my hunch is if you're going to announce a starter today, my hunch is that you would probably have whichever one is the starter is going to have a press conference this week at some point. Starting quarterback has to have a press conference. So at some point, you're going to have that. So how does that get handled one way or another? It's going to be pretty interesting where all of this goes. But you should have an answer today from a Browns fan perspective. Speaking of Browns fans, an all-time great retires in a way that is so befitting of the man. We get into sports that happened over the weekend as well. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
The Reds are on the Fans family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
I remember him. My first year that I was doing stuff with the Browns was Nick Chubb's rookie year. Bacon, Nick, and Denzel. Pretty good draft, John Dorsey had with Bacon and Denzel. And Nick Chubb was the second round pick. And Carlos Hyde was on the roster at that time. And we loved El Guapo from his time here. And Carlos is a very nice NFL running back and a great college running back. But it didn't take long to see the difference between someone who was very good in Carlos Hyde and someone who was elite in Nick Chubb. It was pretty obvious right away. And I think it was probably the game. I want to say that it was a game his rookie year at Oakland against the Raiders where he just had a day and it just became obvious, like, this is the guy. And all Nick Chubb did from that point on as a member of the Cleveland Browns was show up to work his rear end off. At times, I think you could argue there's probably a moment in there where he was the best running back in all of football. But regardless of his talent off the field, what I would say is Nick Chubb was a grown man pro. Pro. He showed up to work and worked every single day. And his injury that he sustained on the hit from Minkah Fitzpatrick is as painful personally to me of an injury in terms of somebody who just did not deserve what had happened to them as any that I've covered in sports. It just sucked that it happened to him. Because he was everything that you'd want an NFL player to be. He's everything you'd want a man to be. He was the definition of speak softly, carry a big stick. Like, he just didn't run his mouth much. And the thing that was kind of cool about him, and you saw it up close, was the relationship that he had with Kareem Hunt. Because Kareem Hunt was loud and boisterous and talked all the time. And they kind of fed off each other really, really effectively. And so when I saw that he retired over the weekend, and I get it. I mean, the injuries, it's too much to overcome. It's all very, very understandable. And it was probably inevitable that the career was going to be short after that injury in Pittsburgh. But you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody. I would imagine that he's on a list that includes Joe Thomas, maybe still Miles, as your favorite Brown. If you're of a certain age and you don't have the Bernie Browns, I'm guessing Nick Chubb is at the very top of the list.
Yeah, if you want to do, for me, a Mount Rushmore of likable Browns, Nick Chubb might be the second face after Joe Thomas. And I remember some of, you know, Jim Donovan's best calls, some of my favorite at least, were of Nick Chubb just ripping off improbable touchdown runs. I think he was, 100 yards shy of Derrick Henry in 2019 for the NFL rushing title. He was not only an incredible football player, but just an incredible all around ambassador to what, like, a Cleveland Brown, what you hoped a Cleveland Brown would be. and seeing the news Saturday morning, because I think he had the post Friday night, you said.
Yep.
It just kind of reminded me of what could have been with him and this Browns team and that 2019. I think they only won six games, but 2020 they go to the playoffs, and you know, just what could have been with all of that, because some of the all-time some of the more talented players, but just great humans were part of those years.
Yes.
Nick Chubb was at the top of that list. Not Kareem Hunt. He good football player, less so human.
And you think about, too, immediately when I first saw this post, I think of the injury, the Steelers game with Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I mm-hmm. remember just how I felt. I was sitting on the couch, and as soon as you see Nick go down, and then they do the zoom in, and he's just like sitting there on his butt on the field, and it was like one of the most heartbreaking injuries, I mean, I've ever seen. My heart just goes to my stomach. I look at my fiance and I'm like, you don't understand like what this guy's been through, and just how he was able to perform with so much dysfunction around him. Like, if he was on this Browns team right now with everything that's going on, what I would expect from the Browns in week one is, hey, we're going to give the ball to Nick Chubb probably 20 times, and he's going to rush for 150 yards, and the quarterback might do crazy things, and the players might be screaming at each other, but he's going to score in the end zone, he's going to hand the ball to the referee, and he's going to put us on our back. And that's what he did the entirety of his career. And the year that the Browns eventually ended up making the playoffs with Flacco is that year that he obviously gets hurt early in the season, and there's just so many years with him where he was putting up over 1,000 yards that you just wish that he got more moments in the playoffs that we couldn't deliver for him.
How about his rookie year when he has 996 yards? He's 4 yards short of 1,000, and they're sneaking Baker in the goal line to get him a touchdown record or something. Nick doesn't say a word. Nothing. Nick Chubb is, I'm pretty sure, the list is entirely him and Jim Brown of players who started their career with five straight seasons with over like 190 attempts, averaging over 5 yards a carry. Nick went 996, 5.2 a carry, 1494, 5 a carry, 1067 in 12 games, 5.6 a carry, 1259 in 14 games, 5.5 a carry, 1525. 5 yards a carry. It's him and Jim Brown that did that. He was on a trajectory as a gold jacket is where he was headed. And the injury derailed it. So he'll be a Browns Ring of Honor guy. He'll be a Browns Hall of Famer, all of those stuff. And he's certainly on a Mount Rushmore of Browns of the last 25 years. Absolutely. And probably on the Mount Rushmore of Browns running backs all time. He's probably on that list as well with Marion Motley and Leroy Kelly and Jim Brown. Imagine those are the four. So it's a pretty impressive list, and he's at the center of all of it. Second hour of the program coming up next. We kick it off by blitzing the weekend. Have some news on the golf side of things as well. Austin Ward coming up at 10:30. Second hour up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. It's decision day for the Cleveland Browns. Todd Monken's expected to name a starting quarterback sometime Monday. Either Deshaun Watson or Shedeur Sanders will get the nod Sunday, September 13th in Jacksonville. Neither will play this Thursday as Cleveland wraps the preseason hosting New England. Cincinnati looks to put a bow on their perfect preseason Friday night in Philadelphia. Bengals are 2-0 after their win over the Bears this past Saturday. Ohio State football is back to practice Monday. Buckeyes held a scrimmage at the Shoe this past Saturday. OSU named 7 captains for 2026 and awarded Brandon Innes the block O this season. Ohio State's 13 days out from hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. In baseball Monday, Reds and Guardians are out west. Cincinnati's at San Francisco. Cleveland's at Anaheim. Guardians are 3.5 back of the White Sox in the AL Central. This update's sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 Ultimate Buckeye experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today and every day at roosterswings.com.
10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Well, we have a little bit of breaking news here. Perhaps we'll float the blitz to the following segment. We have some breaking news out of Cleveland. It will be Deshaun Watson as the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Adam Schefter, Mary Kay Cabot, Jordan Schultz, all reporting via sources. Nothing from Todd Monken yet. I don't know if he's scheduled to talk, but typically does talk on a Monday. I haven't seen anything from Browns PR, so I'm not sure if they have a time on that. But if it's Schefter, Mary Kay, and Jordan Schultz, then it is known. So Deshaun Watson will start week one for the Cleveland Browns. He'll start in Jacksonville. They will then go to Tampa Bay. I think that obviously helps matters. Here's the thing on Todd Monken. I would just tell you, having known him for a while and really enjoy him, we've outlined this many times. It's a 60-year-old guy who is living a dream of coaching in the National Football League. And so there was not going to be anything in this decision other than what he thinks gives him the best chance to win. And he thinks, obviously, and we'll hear from him, I assume, at some point this afternoon, that the best chance for him to win is Deshaun Watson. Now, that is much more difficult of a something to explain because of what happened on Saturday. And so if Todd, I'm sure Todd's going to talk today. Have you guys seen anything from Browns PR? I haven't seen anything yet.
Nothing from Cleveland in any official capacity.
Okay. So I'm assuming he's going to talk today. I mean, they were going to name it. So if you name a starter, you're going to talk. And then my hunch is Deshaun Watson is going to talk either sometime today or sometime. He's going to talk this week because the starting quarterback is going to have an availability. I think that they're going to have a tall task of trying to explain away everything that happened post game Saturday. I think it's a tough sell for the fans. I think that's pretty obvious. So I think if you were looking for the right way to handle it, my hunch is Todd will provide it and do the best possible way of explaining this. And I would have full trust in him to be able to handle it. I'm curious Deshaun's tone when he talks. I don't know if it'll be today or it'll be sometime later in this week, if his tone has changed from what he said on Saturday as well. But obviously, and you guys both articulated your thoughts on this, this is a challenge. This will be a challenging one for Browns fans to wrap their heads around.
I mean, this whole thing's been a debacle. So I guess as a Browns fan, I'm not surprised that despite everything done Saturday, Watson's going to be the guy for at least the first 2 weeks. And then because he apparently can't handle Cleveland Browns fans booing him, like $230 million can't, you know, get you over fans not liking you just playing poorly, which is what it's been. When he's been out there, it's been really bad. And he's been often injured. And at no point has he taken accountability for anything. That, I think, for me is the biggest thing. And for a lot of Browns fans out there, again, I'm doing this as a Browns fan. There's been no accountability with Deshaun. There's been some accountability with ownership on the swing and a miss. But nobody's really owned just how bad of a decision this was. When we talk about the Mount Rushmore of likable Browns, for me, Myles Garrett's still up there. But you don't have Myles Garrett because of this decision, in my opinion. You've wasted so much time as a franchise with this that this won't end well for Cleveland when they come back. What will it be? September 27th, hosting the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
Likely 0-2, because again, I've seen enough of this to know that Deshaun Watson's not the quarterback that's going to command them to wins. Now, if they can get pushed in the offensive line and just give the ball to Quinshon Judkins, a little bit of Dylan Sampson, okay, maybe you can get 2 13-10 wins out of those Florida games, but you come back and you lay a stinker against the Carolina Panthers. It's going to be really, really vitriolic when he trots out there. Also, on the other hand, though, might be pretty nice of a reception for Shador when he comes out. When the hook comes for Watson.
And you got to wonder how long the leash is for the season. And if they're naming him starter, they had every reason not to, obviously, from the fans' point of view after Saturday. So the only thing this tells me is that he must have looked better than Shador. Like, throughout this whole summer,
the body work must have been better.
It must have been better, and it couldn't have been super close, because if it's super close, we can all say they would have went with Shador. So this only tells me there must have been a decent gap between Deshaun and Shador throughout the offseason for them to stick with him, or else there's no other reason for them to come out on Monday and take the hate that they're about to go through and go through these awkward press conferences unless they truly believe that he has put them in a better spot for week one to win the game.
Yeah, I think what you said there is that's the obvious, right? Like, there had to have been in the eyes of Todd Monken. Now, what I've been privy to, because I've seen all but three training camps practices, is I've been privy to that. I've seen some of the off-season stuff going all the way back to mini camp where we were able to watch that, and the media had availability on that. So I've seen those things. And in those things, and I've said this all along, Deshaun was better than Shador. He's better in the summer. He's been better consistently through camp. I've also said that Shador has come a long ways. And the Shador that I saw on Thursday against Buffalo made up some ground and looked pretty good. And I do think that, that part absolutely matters in all of this, that he's gotten this close. But in the eyes of Todd Monken, that gap had to be still pretty big to make this decision to go with Deshaun Watson. And there's no question that what happened Saturday in the eyes of fans is a dramatic change. I mean, that was a dramatic change in the eyes of fans. So they're going to have to be won over. And I guess the way to win that over, obviously, would be to win. As you guys pointed out, the first two games are on the road. So they go to Jacksonville, to Tampa Bay. By the way, that game two is against Baker. So the guy that they picked.
Of course it is.
Right? They went with Shador over Bake. And so you're going to get those two. I'm sorry, Deshaun over Bake. And so you're going to get those two head-to-head. Jordan Schultz with this reporting. He's reporting that the Browns did not calculate Watson's comments about the fan base into their decision. Watson, the final year of a five-year, $230 million deal, get the first crack at starting. Shador will be ready if a change is necessary. It's not this decision, I promise you this, it's not about the money. It's not about the money, because if Kevin Stefanski was back, I don't see any scenario how Deshaun Watson ever plays again for the Cleveland Browns. So the way that this is even possible is because I think Todd Monken was a clean slate guy for all of them. Come out and prove what you can be, and we'll kind of go from there. It will be a very interesting press conference whenever Deshaun talks this week. Whatever tone he decides to take with it will be very fascinating, and the questions will be pretty relentless, and they're going to have to be prepared for all of that. Go ahead, Reese.
So the schedule for Cleveland in terms of media availabilities this week, Monken select players at noon today. Would you expect one of those select players at noon today to be Deshaun? They practice at 1:15.
What did it say?
Todd Monken and select players available. Now, the rest of this week, just real quick, looks like a noon availability for select players tomorrow, then Todd Monken at 12:50, practice at 1:15. No availability Wednesday because it's the day before a game. Mm-hmm. They're hosting the Patriots Thursday at 8 o'clock. Friday, Todd Monken's available via Zoom at 3:30. And then Saturday at noon, select players available before a practice.
Okay, so Todd's talking today at noon, mm-hmm. and then you said select players. So if it were me, and I have no idea what's going on, but if it were to me, I would have Deshaun out there today.
Rip it off. Rip the Band-Aid off.
Get it over with.
I'd get it over with. I would go Todd into Deshaun, and I would do it today. And I would you know, talk to him about how to handle it and, you know, kind of hope for the best. Understand that the media up there is going to press bigly. They're going to press Todd at his availability. I have all the confidence in the world that will be a no problem with Todd. Like we played that, what he said Saturday. That's how you answer it. It's not fun being booed. It's performance-based. If I'd played better, I probably wouldn't have been booed. And he's probably right. He's 100% right. Even if in the third quarter, if Deshaun went bing, bing, bing right down the field, there might be a smattering of boos. Sure. Like there's some of that for sure because of what it all represents. But at the same time, if you play well, that would have been less. And so that just added to it.
You host the Carolina Panthers 2-0. It's smattering of boos. However, the Carolina Panthers are the greatest team on God's green. So if they come in 2-0 and they're able to have a competitive game and Deshaun plays the way Monken thinks is the higher ceiling of the two quarterbacks, then this goes away. Mm-hmm. This goes away completely because all Cleveland fans really, really want at the end of the day is to win. You got 3-win season, stack of a 4-win season. And if you can dig your way out of that before the bye week, this is all forgotten.
And Todd, like you said, I think he's handled things as well as anybody could have. Like the situation he's been put in is so not ideal, but he is almost the polar opposite of Stefanski in the way that there is no coach speak.
No.
He's giving you real answers. Every time he talks, I'm listening to the press conferences because what he's saying, like for the majority of it, I'm believing what he's saying is what mm-hmm. he actually thinks. And so when he talks again today, like you said, you have the utmost confidence that he's going to put himself out there in a really good light and give you straight up answers. I have no idea how you coach Deshaun today. Like, I don't know what you say to him, like on what avenue. I'm sure they have PR people that will be able to help, but I don't know what way you make yourself look better after Saturday.
Yeah, and I just, you know, people are going to believe what they're going to want to believe. I promise you this was entirely Todd Monken's decision. Entirely. Like, this was his decision and what he believes in, and you'll hear from him apparently at noon today, and he'll give his reasons for making that decision. But that's what you're going to – this is one that's – because, again, if it was close, you go Shador for sure. Organizationally, it makes the most sense. Team control, I've laid it out 1,000 times. And so there must have been enough evidence for Todd to feel that this was the way that he needed to go and give his team the best chance to win. And he'll talk at noon on exactly how all of that goes. We'll blitz the weekend coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are number one. And you can hear all the games here on The Fan, which is also number one. Coincidence? I think not. Your home of champions, The Fan.
Men, erect.
ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joins Rothman and Ice every Wednesday at 12:30. And he works blue.
Okay.
The NFL Playbook with Adam Schefter is sponsored by The Roofing Guys.
Indeed it is. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
It is a nice, cool start to the day out there, and all that sunshine boosts us to a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Just some passing fair weather clouds today. We'll have a northwest breeze of 5 to 15. For your Tuesday, starting off in the mid-50s, upper 70s for a high with a mostly sunny sky once again. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. Time to blitz the weekend. Hit it, gentlemen.
Bishop and Friends present a weekend sports blitz.
Sponsored by Metal Supermarkets. Visit metalsupermarkets.com/Columbus for all your metal needs.
I believe I had that. What did you have, Reese?
Oh, the Guardians are back, baby.
Oh, baby.
On a 4-game winning streak. They beat the hell out of the Colorado Rockies over the weekend. Yeah, the Colorado Rockies are, what, 30 games under 500? But don't let facts get in the way of a fun narrative. Every single year, it feels like we do this. June, July, early August, mid August, late August. Only 3.5 back, 31 left to go. They're playing the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim for the next three. Part of those 31, they've got three against the Chicago White Sox. I might be a little ahead of my skis here, but bleep it. It's all I've got as a Cleveland fan.
You're ahead of your skis here.
I'm looking at this thing like, the Houston Astros and Texas Rangers lead the West at 65 and 66.
One game under 500, baby.
What is going on?
Back,
go Gardos.
And you teed me up perfectly, Reese, because mine was also Gardos cooking. Because early last week, I was like, oh my gosh, this team. Like, I was so frustrated, and then I think it was about Wednesday where I was like, what am I doing? They figure this out. I got in the YouTube chat. I was like, guys, we need to just pump the brakes a little bit. I have a very long leash for this team because they've proved time and time again that they're just going to figure it out. They're going to have this weird little slump, and then the back end of the season, they're going to turn it on. And then over the course of the weekend, I was like, you know what? They always do this. I should. Yeah. I maybe next year I need to set an alarm in like late July to say, no matter what the Gardos are doing, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay.
No, and by the way, if they were in the NL Central, they'd be done. It seems to be over. But in the American League Central, no big deal. We're right there. I believe I had that. I really advocated for you to go to your Friday Night Lights last Friday in week one, and they don't disappoint. A great many of you sent me pictures of your Friday Night Lights in your hometowns, and seeing those stands full and the kids and all of it was awesome. NBC as a freshman in a jersey on the side of a field was a cool thing. So very, very cool. And Friday Night Lights, always undefeated in the great state of Ohio. I did not have that. What did you not have, Reese?
I did not have the University of Tennessee spending as much money as they have in the transfer portal. Only in 2026 to start a true freshman at quarterback.
How about that?
Faison Brandon is going to be their starter. They open against Furman September 5th, which is, you know, whatever. But the fact that they've spent so much on every other position, and because Joey Aguilar picked the wrong judge, I guess. They got to go at this true freshman. Like, David Gabriel George, are you sure?
That's exactly what I would send him today.
You sure about this, bud?
Sure about this?
Reese, it's funny because you're just teeing me up over and over again, because the thing I did not have was my Twitter feed on Friday night just being a commit that Ohio State lost out on, which was David Gabriel George just popping off in his first game he was on. ESPN. He looked fantastic. Had like a couple really good runs. And usually when Ohio State misses out on a recruit, they kind of just like go into the wayside. I never see them again. And so it did sting a little bit more when he looked really good over the weekend.
He has not signed his letter of intent.
Keep it open.
He has not. So, I mean, if this is a big risk for Tennessee. If this kid falls flat, if you're David Gabriel Georges, are you sure you're going to sign up for that?
DGG had his first game of his senior year. I think it was Thursday night.
Yep.
Thursday night.
Go find the highlights if you can.
It's insane.
You get it.
Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing is the backup quarterback's Peyton Manning's kid.
And he played.
On that team. And he played. Yeah. I'll tell you what I did not have. Opening the windows on August 23rd. Didn't have that. Loved it, but really moderate, temperate, which doesn't give me great feelings about what I'm probably dialing up for winter. But for right now, I'll take it. Like, to be able to open the windows in August is a win for everybody. Player that impressed, Reese?
I'm going to go with my mother-in-law. So on Thursday, we got married, did a ceremony at the courthouse. It was 10 minutes in and out. It was great. 100 feet from the courthouse, the strap on one of her shoes breaks.
Okay.
And so I had socks. I was like, cause she was going to go barefoot.
Yep.
She was insistent, like going into the courthouse, walking around the courthouse, up the elevators, into the, and it's not a chapel, but the duty room where we were to do the ceremony, walked out of that room, walked out of the courthouse onto High Street, bare feet.
Not messing around.
No. Then if you ever walked around that courthouse, you're going, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
I love it. I was very impressed.
Well done.
Player who impressed for me, and if there was any good takeaways from Saturday, Shador looked good, and he had a clean pocket for like the entire first half. Mm-hmm. That was, for me, that offensive line, the entire first half for Shador, I mean, he was given all the time in the day, which I was loving, and Shador was accurate and putting the ball on the money. So I'll give a combo. Shador played well, and the O-line was cooking.
One other thing, I thought Shador had a hell of a in-game interview as well.
He did.
Really handled all of that well. Yeah, he did a good job. And he's come a long ways, guys. I mean, I can't tell you just how far he's come in a year, just operationally and where he's headed. You know, so we'll see where all of this shakes out. But if you just missed it at the top of the hour, the Browns did name Deshaun Watson the starting quarterback to start the season. Todd Monken with an availability coming up around noon, right, Reese? Is that when it is? And then
yeah, it's not scheduled. Yep,
some player availability thereafter. I'll be curious if Deshaun is one of those guys who talks today up in Cleveland. Player impressed for me. I can't even get mad at him anymore. Buddy Garrity, the now 4-year-old golden retriever, has a new place where he likes to drop a deuce. And if you have dogs, you know that they are very territorial with where they go. They go kind of in the same spots over and over again. So for the longest part, it was out in this piece of the property that we call like the football field. So he would go like way out there. For like the last month or so, he goes right in front of my office and proudly stares at me as he drops a deuce. And it's a little bit like Baxter in Anchorman. Like, I'm not even mad. I'm just more impressed that, like, I think that he just, because I think all he wants is for me to be proud of him. So I think it's almost like, look, Dad, look what I'm doing. I don't think he's, like, sticking it to me. At least that the way I'm going to read it is that he's kind of just wants me to tell him, nice job for your efforts here. So that's the way I'm going to choose to read it versus him sticking it to me, because my other three kids do that plenty. Reese, player who disappointed.
Player who disappointed from this weekend, I'm just going to say me, and that I don't think I spent enough time like appreciating each moment from the pre-ceremony to the ceremony itself to after the ceremony. We had a reception on Friday night, and I think you're just in go, 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 go mode that I don't think I ever really stopped to take everything in, and I wish I had done that. Again, easy to say with the benefit of hindsight, but it went so quickly. And I was like, damn it. I wish I just maybe kind of told everybody, all right, we're going to take five here. Because, man, having family in town and having friends in town and pulling people from different parts of the country, you're trying to coordinate so much. Mm-hmm. And I do wish for that there was just a couple moments of to breathe and really appreciate just the special event.
It's funny, I had, we had like a cocktail hour in between the ceremony and the reception. And, I remember I didn't have a single ounce. We picked all the food. It was like sushi and all this stuff. And I didn't have a single bite of it. So I remember I can't remember exactly who told us, but I remember somebody telling us when we went to the reception, you're going to feel an urge to go, like, greet people and shake hands and, like, thank you for coming. Belay that point. Eat your meal. Eat your meal. Look around. Take it in. But I think, Reese, that's a very natural reaction for you to feel, because it's such a whirlwind, man. You just, it's just spinning. You just go from one thing to the next. And so, yeah, we used to do a thing where we would watch the wedding video once a year. We haven't done that in a while, but we used to watch the wedding video once a year. I think we pulled it out a couple years ago. The boys were just utterly embarrassed, but we used to do it every year. Player disappointed, Isaiah. Who you got?
For me, it was my brother. I went over to his house this past weekend because he had kind of sold me on the idea of he's getting ready to have his second kid, and so his wife is having a baby shower that my fiance was going to, and he's like, why don't you, when she goes to the baby shower, why don't you just come over and we just have some beers and hang out? I'm like, that sounds like a great idea. I came over and we were pouring concrete.
Oh,
that's
no.
How we spent this Saturday. So I went over to his house, and he has a beer there ready for me, and then also a pail of concrete that we're going to stir and pour onto his patio. So we did that, and then I went and picked up Eden from the baby shower all covered in concrete. So that was a disappointment.
My gosh. I will say, post-concrete pouring beer is a nice beer.
It is.
It tastes pretty good. You'd probably rather have not had the concrete pouring in front of it. Player disappointed for me, just football. Like, no college football this weekend. And then preseason football, it's hard to know, like, what counts or what doesn't. None of these teams know what to do with the three preseason games. What's the dress rehearsal games? Is it the second game? Is it the first game? It's just preseason football, at least there was an order to it. The first one, nobody played. The second game, some people played. The third game, dress rehearsal. Fourth game, these are the guys that are fighting to make the roster. With three, nobody knows what to do. Nobody does. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week. What do you got, Reese?
I wanted to give it to Justin Buttermore of the Upper Arlington Golden Bears. They spanked regular old Lintangy 40-7 on Friday. But Anthony Rothman, coming up at noon, is going to host his ninth annual golfing event at Little Turtle in Westerville. It benefits Homeless to Home, Animal Care, Rescue, and Cat Sanctuary up in Marion. So the Special Agent Rothman and Ice are going to be doing their show live from Little Turtle to benefit the doggos and cats.
For me this week, it's Ryan Day. If you have seven captains on your team, that means you're doing a pretty darn good job of getting leadership instilled into the culture, into the program. And if you got seven captains, make them all captains. If you have nine captains, make them all captains. If they deserve it, they deserve it. That's how it goes.
I'm going to go threes here because he sure can pick a linebacker, can he? He went in as soon as he got here and said, I think Arvell Reese is a linebacker. I think Sonny Styles is a linebacker. Turned them both into first-round picks. I remember him in the recruiting process saying he loved everything about Peyton Pierce and his makeup. And then he just has, and you hear things about Riley Pettijohn, Tyr Johnson, all these guys. Like, he just has an innate ability to identify not only talent at a position, but also character at a position. Because not only at that position are you getting some of the most talented players, you're getting guys whose character is off the charts. That so much so that they can be captains like Peyton Pierce is without being a full-time starter last year, which is pretty remarkable to say the least. Austin Ward on all of this in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by Wright Pat Credit Union.
Well, buddy, I guess let's start with the low-hanging fruit here. How many judges in Ohio are the Buckeyes working on to try to add depth at various positions to make NFL players eligible? My God, just crazy. Of course it would be Lane Kiffin, right? Of course. Of course it would be the state of Louisiana that did it. How is Ohio State monitoring this stuff at all? I suppose you'd be silly not to pay attention to it somewhat if there was an opportunity to get better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're trying to bribe any judges to get this thing pushed forward because, you know, this also applies to Jake Diebler in the basketball program, and they were kind of waiting for clarity from the other courts before proceeding. Like, there was a chance to maybe, bring somebody else from last year's roster back for the hoop squad. And I think that given the uncertainty and the potential that could just be you're here today and then tomorrow you're gone, which Indiana, you know, has already dealt with last week. I don't think that Ohio State views it as really worth the headache. And especially now, Bo, like, they closed training camp. Their version is over. They did that on Saturday. And, to get somebody up to speed, if this had happened in January, like, there's a decent chance that Caden Curry would be on this roster. I think he very much wanted to play for Matt Patricia for another year. But I think going down this road as far as they have, now into game week prep, and we're going to talk to Ryan Day in an hour and 15 minutes, and maybe some form of, or fashion of that question will be asked, or I can do that for you. But I don't think that Ohio State is really in that mindset that they should go out and disrupt the roster and come up with more cash, more position battles or whatever else with such a limited time to get them acclimated into the program. Frankly, I'm surprised at the level that LSU is willing to do that, and maybe some other programs, because it's hard to really see how at this point it's going to help you all that much.
I agree with you. I think it tells you that Lane doesn't like his roster.
Yeah, I don't think he does.
Yeah. I mean, despite they spent $50 million on it, I think he doesn't like his roster, and he knows it's not good enough to win in the SEC at the level that's going to be expected of him year one. And so, yeah, of course it was going to be them. One more from an SEC adjacent perspective, but this one has Buckeye ties. We all saw Gabriel Georges on Thursday. Tennessee has named a freshman quarterback to start for them today. Five-star kid, true freshman kid. DGG is obviously going to go to Tennessee. It was between Tennessee and Ohio State. Ohio State threw everything they could at it. Inevitably, he went to Tennessee, and the rest of it is history. Or is it? I guess what I'm curious about is, so he's committed. It's a hard commit, but he can't sign, right? So he can't do that until December. Theoretically, could you still recruit him if you wanted to?
Yeah, and Bo, I mean, my understanding is that, you know, David Gabriel George and his relationship with Carlos Lachlan is still intact and quite sound, and that, you know, in the build up to his season opener, there was in a scrimmage a couple weeks ago, there was still ongoing dialogue between that position coach and David Gabriel George. So, you know, I think, look, you look at the numbers and you look at the payment and the benefits, ancillary benefits or otherwise, that were going to him and the family, and it's not hard, and you don't really blame, I don't think Ohio State even blames David Gabriel George for taking
no
that money and that decision. In fact, I know that they don't. They totally get it, but they have been through enough second chance recruitments, and I do believe that Ryan Day at the top and Mark Pantone on the GM side have adjusted where there used to be a burnt bridge if money was the only thing that you were after. Now there's a different recognition, I think, of the business side of it. Ohio State was incredibly competitive, more competitive than they've ever been financially for a running back in that position in coming out of high school. And the fact that it came up short, that they weren't willing to do some of the other things that the NCAA, my understanding, is continuing to look into with Tennessee, you know, I think that that's fine. And then if Josh Heupel goes 6-6, you've been around the SEC and I've been in Knoxville specifically, that coach and that disruption will not move in to the future. And Ohio State will be right there waiting and saying, hey, we told you so, and then we'll see what happens. So I don't think that anybody in the Woody, as I'm sitting here right now, is holding their breath, hoping and praying that that happens. I think that they're okay with Plan B at this point and a different financial incentive for other running backs and potential for the transfer portal if need be. But they made their case, and if David Gabriel George wants to revisit that in December, I'm sure that they would be open to it at that time.
Yeah, I guess the point was nothing that happened with him a couple of weeks ago is binding. So you can change your decision up until December as much as he wants. All right. In terms of this team, we have seven captains. We got a Blocko and Brandon Innes. All of that seems, the Blocko seems like a no-brainer. I thought it was really noteworthy, buddy, that Julian was a captain in year two, which tells you how different things are year to year for him as they would be as a Heisman finalist and all of those. But it tells me vocally he's come along a great ways. And then the other one was Peyton Pierce, who was behind two first round picks, and he played a lot last year. And I know three's basically considered him one of the three starters, but that tells you a lot on a guy who was a spot starter last year and has elevated to the point to be like one of the voices. And then the fact that he had the most votes was remarkable. What did you make of the captains with seven of them, most we've had since 2020, and just some of the guys who were named captain?
Yeah. And Peyton Pierce has become, you know, really the voice of that defense, and that's important because he's going to be communicating. He's going to have the green dot on his helmet. He's going to be out there for virtually every snap of consequence this year for Ohio State. So I think you could see some of that in the works for Peyton Pierce. Sat down and talked to them, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks or so ago on the beat, and just you can tell that that is someone who is incredibly confident on and off the field at a level that, you know, I think the experience a year ago, you know, playing alongside two first-round top 10 draft picks and holding his own and having the trust of James Laurinaitis the way that he did a year ago, all of that is now feeding into this offseason that's been really strong for Peyton Pierce. He's going to be, you know, the glue for this. He's the heart and soul. They, you know, Berman and I had a conversation last week, and we heard coming out of that first scrimmage that the defense got, you know, humbled a little bit. And the guy who stood up in front of the defense in a meeting room last week and got really emotional and saying that this wasn't good enough, that was Peyton Pierce. So we saw this a couple years ago with Emeka Ebuka doing the same thing in training camp and the offense listening to that. And taking his words and making a correction the next week, and we know where they went from there on that magic carpet ride. So, you know, I think when you have someone with the credibility that Peyton Pierce has in the locker room, in the weight room, in the huddle, that's critical because you have so many pieces to replace. You know, Sonny and Caleb Downs were setting the tone for that team a year ago, and someone has to step up and do that. So Jalen McClain, alongside him, having Kenyatta Jackson to lead the rushman up front. You know, I don't know that any of the seven would qualify as a surprise, but I didn't know for sure if that would be the cutoff, if they would allow that many captains to be out there representing Ohio State. Because sometimes there have been years, and I think Urban had one year that was eight or nine. It was like, well, that tells me that they probably don't know who the leaders are. Mm-hmm. But making room for someone like Jeremiah Smith, who's not going to be the most vocal player, Julian Thane as the quarterback, like, you weren't going to strip the captaincy from Austin Serrable to Brandon Ennis from a year ago. Like, that was just not going to happen because that was built in for them. But the fact that the rest of those guys were able to push it forward and earn those votes from the rest of their teammates does speak volumes. And I think at the top, when you put that block O on Brandon Ennis, you know, there is a bit of a polarization, I think, outside and inside the Woody versus what value he brings. And I'll tell you, inside it, there's never been a single doubt that that is one of the most important leaders on this roster. So the only real uncertainty, Bo, was, you know, Jeremiah told us at Big Ten Media Days that Brandon didn't want to change his number from number one. So I guess that he got over that one and moved forward, and that's a well-deserved honor for Brandon Ennis for sure.
Yeah, it's funny. I wondered when that would happen, when somebody who's in like one of those big time money numbers, and certainly number one is one of those, like, would they be like, man, it's easy to go from like 86 to zero. Like block O, that's easy. It's different going one to zero. I mean, that's a different one. I'll get you out of here on this one. You mentioned Ryan's going to talk here shortly. What questions do you, I mean, there's a lot still that we're trying to sort through, but what is top of mind for you now that he's done with camp, that you're kind of curious where he is with this part of the roster?
Yeah, I think when you get that second scrimmage, and I like it, the structure this week where Ryan Day's had 48 hours since that scrimmage to look at the film and evaluate it. And we talked to him after the first one. He was right off the practice field. I don't know. You know, we're going to go review this. We'll get back to you. We'll talk about that later. You know, everything should have, I think, largely settled in his mind. But so then that begs the question, what hasn't? Do you think that, you know, for Ryan Day, you know, it certainly seems as if it's trending towards Austin Serrable at right guard. Is that definitive in his mind? Is that finalized moving forward? How many position battles does he not feel like Ohio State was able to get settled? There weren't a tremendous amount of them throughout training camp, if we're being honest. I think all of us could largely look at that that roster and figure out what the two deep was going to look like. But, you know, how many spots is it still up for grabs? You know, what is it going to look like with those three running backs who've all had moments that were really encouraging for Ohio State throughout the month of August? You know, and I think a lot of that, you know, strangely does revolve around the offensive side of the football. Given everything they lost on defense, it's still like, well, Matt Patricia's there, and you've got those captains that we mentioned, and a lot of talent and a lot of versatility on offense. It's like, all right, how many running backs, how many wide receivers do you think you can play? What's going on with backup quarterback, and have you finalized the decision at right guard or left tackle? And I think out of that group, they're probably most confident about the offensive line, and then we'll see where they go from there.
You're the best, buddy. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for your time.
All right, bud. We'll see you.
All right, there he goes. Austin Ward, The Beat with Austin Berman, the Roosters Live Show. Joining us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Get your thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently.
For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The friends are the guests and listeners.
Reeser and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Monday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
The BMW Championship took place over the weekend in St. Louis. World number one Scottie Scheffler revealed on Sunday he played all four rounds battling hand, foot, and mouth disease.
So you get your blisters on your hands and in your throat and on your feet. So, you know, to start the week, it was pretty painful to grip the club. But if I was smarter, maybe would have pulled out. But I was playing so good, I felt like if I could knock it out quickly and just get through the first couple rounds, I'd still have a chance. But I think that's part of my stubbornness, probably. And that's probably a strength of mine and a weakness at times. Like, I've never been one to ever pull out of a tournament, especially in the middle of it. That's really frustrating for me, and so I definitely didn't want to do that going into this week, even though it was suggested. But like I said, I'm proud of how I fought. You know, I feel like I'm starting to heal up. My throat is still bugging me pretty good, but my hands feel normal today. I actually almost caught myself shaking hands with Cam on 18, and I would have felt really bad. I was like, oh my gosh, I almost forgot. So that's good news. Starting to feel better.
The top golfer in the world shot a 2-under-68 on Sunday, but he was 10 back of Wyndham Clark, who took the BMW Championship. Scheffler says he'll be ready for next week's Tour Championship in Atlanta. Thing or not a thing?
All right, here are the list of things that are things. Number one, as soon as I hear hand, foot, mouth, I get the shakes because it was something I feared so much my kids getting when they were little. Basically, you get it when you're little is typically like babies, so that obviously as young children, so that's how this happens. So I was always terrified of it. I don't remember any of the boys having it as kids, but that was the one I was most scared of was that. It sounds awful, everything that kind of goes with it. So that jumps out. The second thing was he almost forgot he had it. It's highly contagious. So, like, if he shook hands, he probably would have passed it along to whoever he shook hands with. So, thankfully, he came and that jumped in. Then the third thing that's a thing is he was 10 shot back. That's it. Well, that's how good he is. He's 10 shots back of the winner despite battling hand, foot, mouth all weekend. That's probably the biggest thing.
And it's funny to me because when I heard this immediately, I was like, adults can get hand, foot, and mouth? Because I'd never even heard of it until, like, my brother said that his daughter had gotten it, and she's, like, one from daycare. And so that was when I first even heard of hand, foot, and mouth disease. And the next thing I thought was, isn't it, like, highly contagious? Like, that's the whole thing around is when you're handing your gloves to your caddy, like, I'd be wiping that thing down every single time I was near him. And then golfers playing through pain isn't something they typically have to do. And Scotty just still being in the mix while dealing with hand blisters, like, if I am uncomfortable on the golf course, then, like, it's no longer fun, let alone having blisters on your hands would make it so much less fun.
Tom Friend of Sports Business Journal reported Sunday NBA Commissioner Adam Silver might intervene with the Buss family relating to the sale of their stake in the LA Lakers. In case you missed the news, it was reported that Guggenheim Group CEO Mark Walter intends to sell the Lakers to venture capitalist Joshua Kushner and former Disney CEO Bob Iger at a $12.5 billion valuation. It was later reported that five of the six Buss siblings, who inherited ownership from their father when he passed away in 2013, voted to sell their stake, about 17.8% of the team, at that $12.5 billion valuation. Who can blame them? Jeannie Buss, who operates as the team governor, actually still works for the Lakers, argued via an attorney that her siblings cannot sell that stake. The report from SBJ indicates Silver and Jeannie Buss are close, and there's expectation that the commissioner will try to smooth over those issues with the Buss family. Thing or not a thing?
Just do the succession, too. This is succession.
Yep.
Just do this. Do the Buss family. Do Jerry Buss. I mean, heck, you already have the platform. They had Winning Time, so you've already have that cast. So just have John C. Reilly come back and play the end of Dr. Buss, and then their nonsense that has followed. Like, That's a series. It's ready to go. It's good on all fronts. I do think as another issue, though, the NBA has got to be a little bit worried that they've had like five franchise sales, including their Crown Jewel franchise sold twice in 18 months. That ain't great. And so I'm guessing that has the antennas up a little bit about what's really going on with all these NFL or NBA franchises being flipped. Flipping the Lakers is a hell of a flip. And that seems to be what happened. So there's a lot going on in NBA ownership circles at the moment.
And then I think about a commissioner trying to play mediator of a family that can't decide who's selling what. Like, yep. Adam Silver, like, putting his foot in the water here, being like, you know what, guys, maybe we can figure this out. Like, I don't know if you want the commissioner of your league in the mix of a family argument about whether you want to sell your stakes in the team or not. I feel like that's going to be a messy situation.
She fired her brothers.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I didn't know that there were six of them, because Winning Time only made it seem like there were three.
Yeah, I didn't know there were six either.
Klay Thompson cleared waivers Sunday. He agreed to sign a two-year, $11.5 million contract with the Miami Heat. This was first reported by The Athletic. Second year on that deal is a player option. The deal also includes a 15% trade kicker. Thompson, who's 36, is going to join forces with Giannis as he enters his 14th season. Thompson's 14th season in the NBA with the Heat. His career is 40.9% from the three and is expected to provide floor spacing for Antetokounmpo and Bam Adebayo. Of course, Klay spent the last two seasons with the Dallas Mavericks. Thing or not a thing?
Sort of a thing. I mean, they obviously need the shooting. They need the spacing in the worst possible way, and Klay can provide that. But at this point, he's a situational player. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer on the first ballot whenever that happens. He was the Robin to Steph's Batman for a long time, and at sometimes was even right up there as a co-Batman with Steph. But obviously at age 36, he's not what he used to be. So he's going to be a floor space for them, nothing more. I think that this Miami makeup is a very odd team, to be honest with you. I think the spacing is going to be a real challenge. So, I mean, you'd rather have Giannis than not, obviously, but I think that the makeup of that Miami team is very interesting.
I feel the exact same way. Bam and Giannis, as your two centerpieces, feel like a really odd fit. Adding Klay in, I mean, he's a shooter. He's not the 3-and-D player that he was when he was on the Warriors anymore, but obviously you count on Bam and Giannis to kind of make up on the defensive end. He can help space out the floor, but it feels like they're in a almost play-in team is what the Miami Heat feel to me right now in the Eastern Conference. Probably like 7-8.
I get some, I guess, fantasy football news if you haven't already drafted and you're thinking of Ashton Jeanty. Adam Schefter reported that it was a sprained ankle for the Raiders running back who couldn't put any weight on it after suffering an injury at Raiders practice this past Sunday in Henderson, Nevada. Thing or not a thing?
It just depends on the severity of the ankle. You still have a long ways to go. I mean, you have 3 full weeks before the NFL starts. So just, is it high ankle? What's the severity of it? Obviously, if you're drafting Jeanty, you're going to draft his backup as well. And then you're just saying, do you believe in that the Raiders offense to be in a position to score some more points with Kirk Cousins and then inevitably Fernando Mendoza?
Yeah, you hope that Jeanty is going to have a big year too here and can help take some pressure off of Mendoza when he does eventually take over the starting spot is the bigger story for me. Like, you just hope this doesn't linger along throughout the season. Hopefully he can get nipped in the bud early on. Maybe he sits the first week. We'll see.
Absolutely. All right, final hour of the program coming up next. The Cleveland Browns have named a starting quarterback. It is Deshaun Watson. We have a Ryan Day press conference coming up at around 11:45, 11:50 that we will have for you as well. In addition to that, we have two-a-days, and we close out the NFC North with the Packers and the Vikings. It's all coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Cleveland Browns have reportedly made a decision regarding week one of the regular season. Deshaun Watson's going to start at quarterback Sunday, September 13th, when the Browns open the year at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Head coach Todd Monken will meet with the media around noon today. Neither Watson nor Shedeur Sanders will play this Thursday as the Browns host the Patriots in their third and final preseason game. As for the Bengals, Cincinnati's 2-0 in preseason play. They'll finish up this Friday in Philadelphia. Bengals open the regular season at home, September 13th against the Buccaneers. In college football, Ohio State is 13 days out from from hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Buckeyes will have seven captains this season for the first time since 2020. Head coach Ryan Day will meet with the media in about 45 minutes and will carry Coach Day's comments live on the Fan when he takes the podium. This update is sponsored by United Dairy Farmers. Try UDF's new Ice Cream Quake summer flavors, but only for a limited time. Breaking sports news when it happens on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
It's going to be the interesting afternoon on the press conference front. You mentioned Ryan Day here around 11:45 in a press conference we will take live. And then Todd Monken up in Cleveland sometime around noon is what we expect that to be. In addition to that, there is a player availability up in Cleveland today. Will Deshaun Watson be one of the players who speaks? That would be another thing that would be pretty interesting to see how all of that goes on a very busy newsy. We didn't even have real football this weekend, guys. We just had preseason, like week zeros this weekend. We're finally here. Speaking of preseason, one of the treats for us in preseason is to go through two-a-days. We close out the NFC North with the Packers and the Vikings. Hit it.
Bishop and Friends present two-a-days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? Doubt it.
Are the Green Bay Packers the Pittsburgh Steelers of the NFC?
Probably.
Right? I mean, in most of our lifetime, honestly, they haven't won as much as Pittsburgh, both in terms of total Super Bowls and also in terms of, never really having... I mean, Pittsburgh didn't have a losing season under Tomlin and rarely, if any, had any under Cowher. The Packers have a couple of pockmarks on the recipe. They were under 500 in 2022 at 8-9, under 500 again in 18 at 6-9-1, and 17 at 7-9. One of those is a Rodgers injury year. I remember that one. There's one more, like... There's a 4-12 in 05, a 6-10 in 08, but for the most part, it's 10 wins, 9 wins, 13, a couple of Super Bowls in that time. I think probably the biggest indictment of the Green Bay Packers is they won a total of 2 Super Bowls while having basically the entire careers of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. That's probably the biggest indictment of them, is that they did not win more with the talent that they have, but they are consistently one of the best run, most respected teams and franchises in the NFL, with a lightning fan base, with the awesome classic uniforms and all of it. I mean, it would be a hell of a lot of fun to be a Packer fan in my life. My middle brother was a Packers fan. It sucked having to hear about them all the time, how good they were, and having to deal with all of that. Where they are now is at a pretty interesting spot. They're 7-9-1 last year. They finished second in the NFC North. For the first time, I mean, it's happened a couple of times, but for the first time, it does feel like from a sustainability standpoint, they are certainly behind the Bears. In terms of if you're buying futures on a team in the NFC North, the Bears are going to be the top pick there. And then they're kind of fighting with Detroit and whatever happens in Minnesota, which we'll get to in just a second, for kind of that second spot. They are young. They are talented. They've been aggressive. They're the type of team that makes a swing like they do on Micah Parsons and bring him into the mix. Obviously, he was injured last year, and so that's a part of that. But if you look at their roster, and they're too deep, this is now it's obviously a full-on bet on Jordan Love. They drafted him early, much like they drafted Rodgers early. They let him develop. You look at the talent around him this year, from Josh Jacobs at running back to the receiving talent, which is pretty solid. They've never completely crushed, you know, some of these first-round picks, but they do get Matthew Golden, who was a one last year. They had 2 twos from the previous year, and Jaden Reed, Christian Watson. They're both back, so they should have some depth there. This is a team that should be in the mix for the postseason. This is, I think, what's going to be interesting, though, is can the Packers prove that their belief in the quarterback was validated by them being a true Super Bowl contender? Because I look at them, I don't see Super Bowl contender. I think, to me, that in a way, they're sort of like Pittsburgh a little bit, where the Steelers have been. Where they're good, they're going to make the postseason, but they're not a threat to win the Super Bowl, and that's kind of how I view them this year, guys.
I love the idea that the Packers are going to be opening the season at the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see, you know, we talk about sliding doors moments in this franchise history, obviously having Aaron Rodgers, but drafting Jordan Love as high as they took him. Like, can Green Bay get over what Caleb Williams did to them last year in the wild card round? A week 11 bye for this team, and they've got some questions. Like, is Micah Parsons going to be ready to go? I know the optimism's there that Parsons will be ready for the start of the regular season. But Josh Jacobs, I know he's back to practice. I know he can practice, but he got arrested back in May. And what he was arrested for, allegedly, really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And Schefter says that they could have discipline or a discipline ruling on him by the time the season starts. So those two things kind of loom and linger large, those two players and how their availability is going to affect just what this Packers team can be this year. But if everything goes the way of Green Bay, then this is absolutely a playoff team, if not more. They should want more. And that's where I think the Steelers comparisons spot on, because every year it's like, no, we're making the playoffs. Oh, I don't care who's at this position. I don't care what we've lost. No, we're making the playoffs.
And that's the part when you go get Micah Parsons, then that's a next step that you're supposed to take. For the Packers, they've kind of just been a front runner in the NFC North. And you think about, too, the most likable teams are the ones that build from within, right? They're drafting. Like, I know Green Bay is not a huge free agent destination, and their fans hate that. And so they're one of the most well-run organizations, purely based off drafting and developing. But it's similar to the Guardians. All you want your well-run organization to do is spend. And if you look at them from the outside in, it's like, oh my gosh, I'd love for the Browns to be run like the Packers. But if you're a Packers fan, you're like, we want them to spend. They finally will get Micah Parsons. Now you have to win.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I think, to me, this is a coach quarterback referendum year in Green Bay. Let's hit the categories on the Packers coach grade for Peter LaFleur.
Oh, I think the most handsome LaFleur brothers, a B+. I think he's a really good quote, a really good coach. I think he's a great mind for football, but I'm still kind of waiting for more. Still kind of want more.
They kind of walk hand in hand, don't they? I mean, it's kind of like time for them to, you know. I mean, good Lord, this is what he's done. 13-3, 13-3, 13-4, 8-9, 9-8, 11-6, 9-7-1. Playoffs every year but one. Lost in the NFC Championship game first 2 years.
And the other portion, I have him down as an A-, and the other portion of that too, Bo, is he has had two different quarterbacks during that time period. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no drop-off. You bring in Jordan Love, yet again, questionable with the fan base because everybody wanted you to build around Aaron, draft a wide receiver in the first round, please, right? And then they go get Jordan Love, don't get Aaron another weapon. What happened? It paid dividends because now they're still cooking.
It's really one we'll never know if it really did. We'll only know if it really did if Love is a star.
Only if they win a Super Bowl with him.
Yeah,
but he's good,
like,
though. He's he good. Is.
There's no question. He's a franchise quarterback. That's why I think this is a massive year for them, because if they had drafted Rodgers a receiver, they lost in two straight NFC championships with Rodgers. If they had drafted a weapon, because that would have happened for the 2021 season, that was the year they lost to the Niners in the divisional game.
Yep.
So, gosh almighty, like, it's right there. I think it's an 8-minus, too. I think he's great. I think he puts his team in a position to win. I think he's got a big say on personnel, and their roster's really good, and their quarterbacks come along. So I think he's an A-minus coach, too. To me, he feels like Midwest McVay. Uniform grade on the Packers, Reese?
Well, I think they're home and away. Like, the Packers uniform, you can recognize anywhere. And I think it's an A. But then they brought out those Acme throwbacks, and it's a D. So I'm going to average, like, a B, B+, A-minus.
I have them as an A-. They feel similar to the Bears to me. Very iconic, but I do like their color scheme a little bit better than I like the Bears. And so I'll go A-, but just the iconicness. When you see them on the field, you know exactly who they are.
Yeah, I think it's an A. I think they're pretty beautiful. I think it's a color scheme you rarely see anymore. It is one that's duplicated a lot in high school. The uniforms are copied by a lot of high school teams. I think the G is great. I think that the colors are great. I don't know. I wonder if they'll wear that Acme one again. They have another one that I kind of like that's kind of like a green one with kind of an all-green one that's kind of cool as a throwback that they wear every once in a while. But I think it's, from a brand uniform standpoint, it's an A- for me. One franchise great you could add to this version of the Packers, Reese.
Well, Reggie White's probably the ultimate here. It's funny, I might do Reggie White for the Philadelphia Eagles as well, because good luck blocking that defensive front if you put him with, what, Georgia's 2021 defensive line. it's Reggie White for me. Eddie Lacy, just because he was fun, and that would be a good depth piece, or I guess a good starter if Josh Jacobs does get disciplined.
For me, I'm also going with a fun one here. I think seeing Sterling Sharp put on the helmet again, because at wide receiver, they still haven't. They've drafted a bunch of wide receivers, but they still haven't quite found a dude yet, and I think they still need a dude.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You guys both went old school, which I was anticipating. So I had a list because I go third. So I always have a list of three to not be redundant. So those two were the first two that I had because I thought for sure one of you guys would go Davante Adams. You didn't, so I will. I'll go Davante Adams as the receiver that I would add to this team. And I think all of the guys that we mentioned, any one of them, obviously, they're all gold jacket type guys. Franchise tier, S being the best, F being the worst, Reese.
I think this is an A-tier franchise. Everything they do seems to work.
I'm A-tier. They just need the championships. You only get one with Rodgers. That's the thing keeping them away.
I think it's an S. I think it's an S. I think if you're talking about like five losing seasons in 40 years, two Super Bowls, that feels S-y to me. I know obviously you'd like to have a little bit more success, but my God, to be able to go Favre-Rodgers love over a 40-year period is crazy, that run of success. So I think it's probably, if they're not an S tier, then I don't know who is. So I'll go S tier with the Packers. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting. Reese?
This team, fully healthy with Micah Parsons, can make a playoff run. I don't know if they're a Super Bowl team, but they can, if they're in the Super Bowl because everybody's healthy, it wouldn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
I think they're on the edge of win it all just because of the Micah Parsons deal. You're kind of there with Jordan Love. If you aren't win it all right now, then Jordan Love probably isn't the guy that's going to win it all with you.
That's why I think it's a massive year for coach and quarterback. Because if Love elevates his game and becomes somebody who's an elevator as a player, then I think that they could be a win it all team. It would not shock me if they made a run. I think as it stands right now, they're playoffs. But I think of the teams we've done so far, there's not pressure on Love and LaFleur. There isn't. But I think, like, if there's another level for either one of them, then that changes the trajectory of this franchise in the division a little bit. And this division is a banger in terms of the teams that are in it. Another team that is in this division is a team that hopes with a change at quarterback, things can get righted in a hurry. That is the Minnesota Vikings. We'll hit the Vikes coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
There was a radio show that constantly talked about Ohio State athletics. Well, good news. It's real, baby. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Ohio sports destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
It is a nice, cool start to the day out there, and all that sunshine boosts us to a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Just some passing fair weather clouds today. We'll have a northwest breeze of 5 to 15. For your Tuesday, starting off in the mid-50s, upper 70s for a high with a mostly sunny sky once again. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Reese's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
2 days continue in the NFC North in Minnesota with the Vikings. This is a fan base, and AR could attest to this certainly. This is a fan base that has really been through the ringer, man. Like, it doesn't get quite the attention from a drought standpoint as, for example, like the legendary baseball ones used to get, whether it was the Cubs or the Red Sox or certainly the White Sox as well. Doesn't get the attention that, you know, Cleveland gets, but it's one of those ones where Minnesota has knocked on the door a lot. They played in a bunch of Super Bowls in the 70s. They were on the precipice several times in the 90s, obviously in 98 being the best example of that. Threes would attest to that one. There's been times here in the 2000s where it feels like they're right there. And it felt like they were kind of heading in this direction with the drafting of J.J. McCarthy. The question was just, did they land their quarterback? And they drafted him, and they had Sam Darnold in the room. And I was there interviewing at the time general manager Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah the day they found out that J.J. McCarthy tore his knee up his rookie year, and because he was going to be the starter. And they had to pivot to Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold went 13-3 in his 1 year as a starting quarterback at Minnesota. They allowed him to walk, and the rest is history in Seattle as he wins a Super Bowl. Meantime, in Minnesota, not only is J.J. McCarthy not the quarterback, but the guy who drafted him, Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah, is no longer the general manager. So as opposed to it being McCarthy, it is Kyler Murray. As soon as Kyler Murray was bought out in Arizona, this was the spot. If you're him, this is a no-brainer. This is a quarterback loving head coach in a quarterback friendly offense with a quarterback's best friends split out wide. He has probably the most talented, or certainly a 1A most talented receiver in the game in Justin Jefferson. Jordan Addison is there as well. They added Juwan Jennings to that. They have a decent run game in Aaron Jones. Their offensive line is nice. I have no idea how good the Vikings will be this year. I don't. I know they went 9-8 last year, finished third in the NFC North with really up and down quarterback play. But here's what I do know about them, and I would bet anything on this. Statistically, Kyler Murray's going to have a year. He is going to have a year. He's going to throw to those two receivers. He's going to be able to scramble, and he's going to be able to pick up a lot of yards there. I would not. So from a fantasy perspective, I don't even know where he's being drafted. No one should be drafting fantasy yet anyway. Give it a couple of weeks before that happens. But if you are drafting and you need a quarterback with a later round, if he goes that far, I'd be shocked if he does not have a massive statistical year this year. In terms of what they are this year, it's just a bet on Murray. And here's the thing about Kyler Murray. Who says he can't pull a Darnold? Who says he can't pull a Baker? He's had better than both of those guys in his first stint in Arizona. He's a Pro Bowl player in Arizona. It didn't end up working for whatever the reason may be, but he was the number one overall pick in the draft. He does have elite arm talent. He's got elite escapability, and now he's playing with a coach who is as good as anybody in terms of getting the maximum out of an offense. I don't know if they'll win a lot of games. I think they will be fun, and I would not want to have to deal with them on a week-in, week-out basis.
I mean, this is a team that feels ready. And then I was telling Isaiah this in the break, like, they're really going to start Kyler Murray in 2026, the Minnesota Vikings. And honestly, that's probably the best case scenario for them. I mean, I think, would they have liked to have Sam Darnold back for this team?
Yes. Yeah, that's probably why Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah is fired.
Yeah, because they didn't.
Because they made a decision that they thought JJ was ready. And you know, obviously he wasn't. I mean, so Kyler is 29. So he's the same age as a lot of those guys we mentioned. The last time he played a full season in Arizona was 2024.
Yeah.
So he completed 70. Just think about this. 70% of his passes, 68.8, 38-51, 21 touchdowns, 11 picks. He also ran for 572 and 5 scores. Like, he's a playmaker. He is absolutely a playmaker. And he's got seasons on this. You pull up, I mean, his second year, it's 4,000 yards, 68%, 26 and 12, while rushing for 819 and 11 scores. I mean, that's a borderline MVP caliber season. So he's done that. When he's healthy, the problem is, in the last 4 years, he's played 11 games, 8, 17 in 2024, and then just 5 last year. So he just hasn't played consistently. But my goodness, when he's played, he's put up numbers. Like, his career is far better than Baker's in terms of statistical accumulation, in terms of former number one overall picks who played for the, you know, both being Sooners and Heisman winners.
I know Aaron Jones, their running back, was dealing with a hamstring issue last season, but he had 1,000 yards. He had over 1,000 yards rushing in 2024. And so, yeah, there's no reason to believe this team can't make the playoffs and make a run in it. I love the fact that they're going the first 2 weeks of their season hosting the Green Bay Packers and then at the Chicago Bears. I would love it if most teams did at least a divisional opponent in the first 2 weeks of the season, because it's just a good, it's such a good, you're not going to need juice, I guess, to start the NFL season, but the fact that you get like Packers Vikings and then you get Vikings Bears weeks 1 and 2 is as good for any fan base as possible. Week 6 is the bye, so a little early, because I still don't think you're going to know exactly what you are after that week 5 game against the New Orleans Saints. They are one of the international games, taking on the San Francisco 49ers on November 22nd in Mexico City. So that's always a weird spot, I think, to be in.
Yes.
Yeah. You're just, the dates in between those games always put you in an odd spot, and they've got the Packers the week before they go to Mexico. But boy, if they can be healthy, and if Kyler Murray can be any bit of as good, if Kyler Murray can be really, really good, I don't think he needs to be great for this team to have a fun year.
But it feels like the division is the biggest thing holding them back, because if you place them in a couple other divisions, it would be, oh, these guys could be a front runner in the division. Mm-hmm. When I look at this division, I'm like, will everyone finish 500 in division play? Like, is everyone going to go 3-3? Because there's not a clear front runner for me, and there's also not a clear bottom either.
No, I mean, they went 9-8 last year with J.J. McCarthy starting 10 games and completing 58% of his passes and having more interceptions and touchdowns. Carson Wentz then started 5 games, completed 65%, equal touchdown to interception. Like, if Kyler can give you 90% of what he was the last time he started, they're going to be a problem. And it's a little bit like Kyler is if Lamar Jackson is the A+, hardest to prepare for on a one-off basis, Kyler's like the B of that. just really difficult because he plays unlike anybody else in the league. So they could be a surprise team for sure. Coach grade as we hit the categories on the Minnesota Vikings, Reese, Kevin O'Connell.
I think Kevin O'Connell is a solid B plus. He's another one of those. Like I've just got to see it. Now I'm going to give him an A minus. He resurrected Sam Darnold.
He did.
That's a Herculean effort.
I'm going to give him a B, but that's only because he hasn't won a playoff game yet. I think his regular seasons have been really solid, but no playoff wins. I'm going to keep him at a B for now, but he's teetering.
He's an impressive dude. I think he's a B+, but I think this is a massive year for him. I think because it feels like someone had to take the fall for the J.J. McCarthy pick, and so the general manager, he won that power struggle, but now all of the pressure is on him to kind of shape this thing going forward. So I think it's B+ with a lot of pressure. Uniform grade on the Minnesota Vikings, Reese?
They're an A. The Purple People Eaters, easy enough for me to say, one of my first Little League uniforms. So it had a great affinity. It had a great affinity for the purple, white, and yellow.
This one's an A+ for me. I've loved this uniform since I was a little kid. You got the horn on the side of the helmet. The purple and gold is so iconic. I love these uniforms.
I think it's an A. It's not quite an A+ for me, but I do love that the helmet looks exactly like a Viking helmet. I just think that's so cool. And I think that their best uniforms are actually, as opposed to normally, like I'll say, what you wore in the 80s or 90s, what they're wearing right now is the best uniform they've ever worn, in my opinion. Because some of the purples didn't match before. Now it all matches. I think their uniforms right now are absolutely pristine and perfect. And then they have the white one that's beautiful. No notes on Minnesota and their brand. One franchise great you could add to this team, Reese.
I think Randy Moss would be ridiculous.
Jeez. He chose violence.
I also wondered about Randall Cunningham. Both of those, I think, would be a ton of fun.
Like Randy at the X, like Justin Jefferson lined up right next to him in the slot. Good luck, kids.
And Kyler's just going to chuck the ball.
Yeah. Someone's down there.
Down there somewhere.
You and Randy Moss, I will go, instead of probably one of the greatest, if not greatest, wide receiver of all time, one of the greatest running backs of all time, give me Adrian Peterson in the backfield.
Yeah. Someone's down there.
Down there somewhere.
You and Randy Moss, I will go, instead of probably one of the greatest, if not greatest, wide receiver of all time, one of the greatest running backs of all time, give me Adrian Peterson in the backfield.
Down there somewhere.
You and Randy Moss, I will go, instead of probably one of the greatest, if not greatest, wide receiver of all time, one of the greatest running backs of all time, give me Adrian Peterson in the backfield. Yeah.
That's the one I was going with, too. Either one of those are both A+. You could go with that. You go
pain.
Because everything else is, it's all pretty A. It's an incredible fan base, great stadium, good football town, all of it. I think I'm going to go B tier as well, just because I think I'm going to reserve S tiers for like very few, and then A. I'm going to grade on a tough curve. B tier, A tier is going to be, you have to have won a Super Bowl in my lifetime to be in the A tier. So I'm going to go B tier for Minnesota, but they're very, very good. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting, Reese?
I think this is a playoff team is probably their ceiling. Like, because you talked about it, Isaiah, with the conference, the division cannibalization. Somebody's getting left out of this, and my money would be on the four. It's this Viking squad.
Yeah, they do feel like the bottom of the four, but they're also like the biggest question mark, too, because you just don't know what Kyler's going to be. I think their playoffs at their ceiling, but I would not be surprised if they miss. But if you're a Vikings fan, you go out and get Kyler Murray. You have the roster built to win. You got to be hoping for playoffs.
I think they're a playoff team. I also think they could win this division if Kyler's great. And he's got it in him to be great. He's been it. I mean, you look at him statistically, he's been great. And it wasn't that long ago. So he could absolutely be great again. I think they could win the division. I think they're likely going to be just on the outside looking in. I think that now that we're kind of done with the division, Bears at the top, and then Lions, Packers, Vikings, flip a coin. That's kind of where I am. Like, depending on injuries and how it all goes, it could go in a lot of different directions. Luke Braun covers the Vikings, and he joins us in 2 minutes for Perspective. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Guest Hotline is sponsored by Columbus Worthington Air and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, let's get some perspective on the Minnesota Vikings and the NFC North. Luke Braun joins us. Locked On Minnesota Vikings is where you can find him. Luke, thanks so much for taking the time. This team, 9-8 a year ago with really poor quarterback play kind of in general. They go out and they get Kyler Murray. This is a no-brainer place for him to go from his perspective. What have you seen so far from Kyler?
Yeah, Kyler Murray's had, well, he's had an up-and-down camp. Kevin O'Connell's offense is very complicated, and it's not necessarily as conducive to the kind of improvisational style that Kyler likes to do. You can have a scramble drill, but it's a lot more flowchart, if-then, and there's not a lot of space to be creative outside of fully breaking the play. And I think he's starting to get used to that extra amount of thinking, that extra organization that they didn't necessarily make him do in Arizona, because they sort of built a whole offense around a guy like Kyler Murray, where he's walking into a system that wasn't made for him. So it's been up and down. He's clearly the best quarterback in the room. That's not in question at all anymore. But in terms of what we saw in the preseason, it wasn't that much, but it was what we would be used to from Kyler Murray. The accuracy was okay, but not great. His feet were a little choppy, and he's going to be the same guy he was in Arizona, where he gives you probably 12, 13 great games and then some that leave you scratching your head.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at his, it's funny because anytime you talk about the Vikings, you think about the Darnold what if, right? And it's led to like good grief, sure, like that type of thing. But then we've had the Baker who kind of resurrected himself in Tampa Bay. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, why can't Kyler do that too? And then I went and looked at Kyler in Arizona. I'm like, gosh, 2 years ago, he was great. And he's been a Pro Bowler. Like he's had a higher and more accomplished early career than either one of those guys did. But the fit is an interesting one here with Kevin. What is Kevin doing to get Kyler comfortable in an offense that is so dramatically different? Because when he was drafted at Arizona, Cliff basically just turned the offense over to him.
Yeah. And that's, I've got the same question. I can't be sure. He's getting down the ins and outs of when to do this side adjust or when to make, you know, when the receiver's going left, when he's going right, what's the leverage, what's the coverage, all of that other stuff. But I think some of it is going to have to be a humbling for Kevin O'Connell to understand that the guy you have right now is at his best when he can just kind of go color outside the lines and go be himself for a little while, go spray paint on the walls and be a rebel. If that's not going to be encouraged or allowed and you end up just restricting Kyler Murray, you're going to end up with this really tightly wound, mistake-prone offense with a whole bunch of inefficiencies in this organization. But then the catch-22 of that is if you let Kyler run around and do his thing, sometimes he's going to throw the worst interception you've ever seen. And you kind of just have to put up with that. But, I mean, it's not like the Vikings paid a lot, so they maybe are going to get what they paid for. But I have my concerns about this offense, and I think blaming everything that went wrong with it on J.J. McCarthy is an oversimplification. They have problems at center. They have problems at T.J. Hockenson hasn't been good enough. They had a very strange season from their wide receivers, as good as they are. Did we fix whatever was wrong there? Because it wasn't all about the quarterback. And the play calling, a lot of times, has taken way too long to develop. So did we fix all that, or did we just say, it was all nine and change out the quarterback and pretend everything was going to be fine?
Well, buddy, you mentioned JJ. That's where I'm going next. I remember interviewing Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Andrew Berry at a joint practice up in Cleveland the day they found out that JJ was done for the year and was going to miss the year. And it was like I was presiding over a funeral a little bit. Like that's how good he was as a rookie. How did this get to this point?
I'm sure we will get the tell all in a few years of what's really going on behind the scenes. But again, the PhD offense and all the complications, JJ just hasn't taken to it. He hasn't been able to make those adjustments and get everybody on the same page. So you get a lot of miscommunications. A lot of times those miscommunications happen in the snap count or in the huddle, how to line up, when to actually snap the ball when motion is coming. These are all really precisely timed things in the NFL that we kind of take for granted because most quarterbacks can do it and JJ hasn't been able to. That's non-viable. That's, I mean, you can't, maybe can't even be on the roster if you can't do that. And for whatever reason, the complication he hasn't taken to, and I would say overcoaching of mechanics, which they backed off late last year and then he got better. So I think the Vikings agree with me there, but they've just put too much stuff in his head. And, you know, have you ever, I don't know if you golf, but have you ever read those golf articles that say, here are the 40 things you should think about in your backswing?
Yeah, it all goes to hell.
Right?
No.
It's way too much going on. And I think there's a little bit of that happening, and he just hasn't been able to get over it. So maybe a year without the pressure off of him, where he's not rehabbing an injury, but he's just kind of taking the time. I mean, that's what fixed Sam Darnold, if we want to go down that road. Mm-hmm. There's just a little time off to decompress and to let this offense come to him a little bit might be better. But if I'm being realistic, what J.J. McCarthy needs is to not be on the Vikings, is to not pair with Kevin O'Connell. The QB whisperer ain't whispering this one. You got to get somewhere else where they'll give you something that works with your head.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this one, buddy, and greatly appreciate your time. If you get 90% of Kyler's best at Arizona, what is this team? What's the ceiling for this team this year? And then conversely, what's the floor?
90% of Kyler's best at Arizona is a pretty inconsistent season. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, I mean, you probably get 10 awesome games, but then you got 7 where you need to make up for it. What the nice thing is, the Vikings defense looks absolutely incredible. Just like disgustingly innovative, and every player is playing great, even guys you probably never heard of. So maybe you can take a few of those. I say 90% of Kyler's best. You're going to lose somewhere he plays good. You're going to win somewhere he plays bad. I'd say that's probably maxing out at a 10 or 11 win season in a first round exit, like it was in 2021.
Okay. Very good. I'm really fascinated by it. I look forward to seeing how the season plays out, and appreciate your perspective on it today. Thanks for your time, pal.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Luke Braun, Locked On Minnesota Vikings, joining us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We anticipate Ryan Day at the podium shortly after we come back from this quick timeout. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Football.
Training Camp Report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safelite Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. Defensive tackle James Smith and defensive end Quay Russo have been teammates for years. Playing together at Carver High School in Montgomery, Alabama, then at the University of Alabama, Ohio State marks the third stop together in their football lives. Here's Russo on what made him and Smith so close.
We went to the same high school. We trained at the same facility. We was kind of with each other every day, and like we know what we're looking for. And coaches, we both want to get to the next level.
Smith said he wants to do whatever he can to help the Buckeyes.
I tell my young guys, like, I need you to look. When I leave here, I need you to understand what it's supposed to look like. So you can tell them, like, nah, because I seen it this way, and this right here worked. So what James did, and I seen how I got, I need to do the same thing, you know? Like, kind of like leaving, like Coach had it saying, leaving the jersey in a better place than you came in. Like, when you came in, leaving the jersey in a better place.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at Safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
In the last two transfer cycles, James Smith and Quay Russo are two of six players to transfer to Ohio State from Alabama. So for Russo, what made Ohio State the right place for him?
I'd say definitely Coach Patricia. You know, him being coming from the NFL, him having like a multiple defense, having a lot of guys on the field like to earn a job. So I'd say definitely Coach Patricia, yeah.
Patricia has also had a great impact on Smith, especially in the film room.
We get out at 9, I'm here at 10:30, talking with Coach P. We watching film, but we watching J-Lo, we watching everything. We just watching NFL, we go from college to NFL, back to college. Then we watch the NFL, and it's like, it's plays you already seen, but it's like, it's kind of, it's that repetition of seeing it over and over and over. And that really helps. I didn't really understand that.
The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th versus Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Hair volume to sale, Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Care Heating and
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, so the way that this is going to go, when Coach Day gets to the podium, we will take him live. So that's, and then once that happens, then our program is over. Between now and then, we've got a little business. So let's start it with the poll, Reese.
Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, who's going to be named the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns? So, you know, a fan poll at this point doesn't matter, but we thank our friends at JT's Pizza and Pub for that. Your options are Watson or Sanders. It is Watson. Todd Monken's, or yeah, it is Watson. Munkin's going to speak. Todd Monken, the head coach of the Browns, will speak around noon about said decision.
Yeah, so about 15 minutes from now, Todd Monken is going to talk, and then they'll have some player availability as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. Do we have time to fire the three things to appease everybody on that side of thing, Isaiah? Let's go ahead and
Let's do it.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Number one for me. So last night, I wasn't paying attention to today as the is 8:24. I had no idea. But last night, there was really nothing on, and the boys were kind of milling around. And I was kind of bouncing through the sports tier, and I landed on Lakers-Raptors. And I watched the second half of Kobe's 81-point game. And let's just say, the boys are like, what is this? And I'm like, sit down and watch. And watch what is consecrated here. And so we did. And let's just say it was very different than Bam Adebayo's 83-point game. The effort to stop him was quite significant. Quite significant.
Yeah, I didn't realize we have TVs on in the studio. And it is 8:24. And so ESPN was doing a bunch of features on Kobe Bryant, and that just an incredible performance. I mean, just a one of one in terms of athletes.
It was Kobe so Bryant. Cool to rewatch it, Reese, because I mean, I saw it years ago. No one watched it live because it wasn't a national televised game. It was on at 10:05 Eastern.
Wasn't
nobody
it
watched it live
towards the end of the season? If I can remember it,
I think it was more mid. Okay. I think they were in their 20s on a win, but yeah, it was. But yeah, it was just a regular Sunday game in LA at 10:05 start.
First thing for me, so we did the wedding ceremony Thursday at the Franklin County Courthouse, and then we did a celebration after at High Bank Distillery in Grandview. So just want to thank Jenna, Adam, and the team at High Bank for accommodating us and making a really special day extra special, because everything there is great.
First thing for me, I might have to stay off Twitter this football season. I don't know if I have the strength to be on there, and it's one of my favorite things to be on. On Saturdays, I can be on there because, you know, the Buckeyes, they always do me right. But on Sundays, I don't know if I can do it this year, and I'm sure I say this every year, but this year, oh my goodness. It feels similarly to when you're getting, like, close to election season and everything online is so negative that I'm like, I don't know if I want to take this in every Sunday. I need some positivity in my life, and the Browns playing at 1 o'clock never gives me that positivity.
Number two for me, I'll tell you what. It's been an interesting morning in the NFL. 49ers owner Jed York arrested yesterday in northeast Ohio, according to a report at WKBN, pleaded no contest to charge of misdemeanor, possession of criminal tools, disorderly conduct. Guys, you read this report. Prostitution, trailer park, East Palestine, Ohio. This guy owns the Niners.
What in the world?
What is going on, man? What is happening?
I have no idea how to follow that because I'm reading it from the WKBN website. And they make
billionaires.
This is
in
an HBO
sentence.
Show waiting to happen. Speaking of HBO shows, I got Lanterns, the DC superhero show last night. Did the first two episodes. I think they're doing it weekly episodic. It's really good. Like it's a superhero show, yes, but they do a really good. It's not a goofy superhero show.
This is Kyle Chandler, right?
Yes, he is nice. Hal Jordan in it.
Nice.
Second thing for me, I don't know what is going on down in Texas, but the headlines coming out of there of linebackers being dismissed and parents complaining there's weird things going on in the locker room that people can't explain and they want too much PR coming out of there. Steve Sarkisian, just a couple weeks away from playing the Buckeyes, I don't think that everything you see online, like, oh, this is going to be bad for them going into the season. But sometimes when you have this much smoke, like right before the season starts, it definitely doesn't make things.
No, it doesn't. And I think that a lot of these guys, I'm going to give Sark a little bit of a pass. These guys, like, how do you hold these guys accountable? You can't say, how do you hold somebody accountable? That's a tough spot. Number three for me, week zero is here. Should have been last week. It's this week. We got games, including the National Champions League. Let's get to the video this week. Let's go.
Final fifth for the Jim York things. 3.5 by the White Sox with 31 games left to go. In case you missed, I don't have a game win streak. Don't worry, that's a 3 games of fucking time thing. And that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are also bad. But the Guardians begin a 3-game series out west with them tonight at 9:38. Your Reds are also out west. Cincinnati's in San Francisco tonight. I believe we'll have that game on the fan following a couple of things because it'll be a late one.
Yeah.
The thing for me with the Gardos is I get the Rockies might not be great. And maybe they've been beaten up on some bad teams, but before they were losing to those teams. So that's the difference for me is, you know what? I can be a little bit happy about this. Final thing for me, we're getting ready to go to Rothman and Ice in a little bit. And they're going to have breaking news, apparently, coming from Italy. Who's in Italy? Adam King. 115.
Oh, for God's sakes. Why are we talking to him at all, let alone when he's in Italy? Good Lord. I mean, we can eat any excuse to not have him on, and they go ahead and put him on even when there's plenty of reasons to not have him on. We're awaiting coach up on campus, so we'll keep it here for just a second. This is going to be pretty wild next 10 minutes or so. So you're going to have Ryan at the podium just up the street here, and then up 71, you're going to have a Todd Monken press conference at noon where he talks about his decision to go with Deshaun Watson as the quarterback there. So that one will be very interesting, and then we'll get Todd here momentarily. From the Ohio State perspective, you now have two scrimmages in the books. One thing that was pretty illuminating for me was, and I think Big Ten Network does a great job when they do the campus tours. And I saw Revson and the guys at Ohio State last week. And a lot of the Jake Butt, who we honestly should get on here in the next couple of days because he had some really incredible insight on this roster and everything that was kind of about it. He talked about the two freshmen and Boyd and Henry and how they really looked the part at receiver. It feels like we should be heading into Ball State week now. And I'm guessing like in the body clock for a lot of these guys, they kind of feel like this should be game week as well. So you kind of have to just play this out here over this week to get to a point to one more week now that camp itself is done and then two full weeks of prep for Ball State with that Texas game still out there. So lots of questions that I'll be interested in, Ryan. One that I'm curious if it gets asked is, what would you do if a fifth-year guy wanted to come back? Like, would you entertain that? Like, would you say no? Like, how would you handle it? All these guys are being asked this question. Lanning had a great response to it. Would Day have one as well?
I mean, Sarkisian's got one. His right tackle is a fifth year. I think they did rookie camp with the Texans and with the Cleveland Browns. So I think they all, you'll say it until you realize, like, there's that one guy. He might be the difference. Like, with Cignetti mm-hmm. taking two guys on the defensive front that had already exhausted all of their eligibility. Ball State's quarterback. Keldrick Luster is a transfer from both Texas State and SMU.
Okay, Blood Ponies.
So he'll be the quarterback the Buckeyes see on September 5th.
Yeah. We don't have an example of anybody who was drafted returning to
college,
the
biggest
right?
thing is right now they're all undrafted. All undrafted players. That's the next step in this, though, right?
Can you be offered more in NIL yes. than you would for your contract
yes,
if you're
course.
A seventh-round draft pick?
Didn't you see that? That Dante Moore is making yep. more than the first round quarterbacks. I don't know if he's making more than Mendoza, but he's making more than Ty Simpson.
I buy that.
This year.
And he's getting just checks directly from Nike.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's your, I was thinking about the, just like all the Ohio State guys who were unsigned. So it's like CJ Donaldson, Tywan Malone, Lorenzo Styles. I mean, they'd love to have Lorenzo Styles back. Why wouldn't, I mean, he was spectacular and was a true leader and all of those things, I assume. But those are the type of questions that you're thinking about are guys who were undrafted coming back. So, and look, it's a no-brainer for all of those guys too. I just think it's such an interesting thing on how you handle it from a roster standpoint, you know, kind of where that goes in terms of, do you hold spots or do you make spots? There's always money in the banana stand. We know that. So it's never going to be about the money if you want to get a guy back who's got a lot of talent. So that'll be something that'll be very interesting. Then beyond that, there's a couple of position battles out there. See if we get a little bit of light on kind of that wide receiver room depth chart. How does Ryan see that offensive line inevitably shaking out? Does he have some answers that have crystallized there? Those are some of the topics of discussion that you will be having on that side of things. So I'm just going to ask you guys, because we're in a position here where we're kind of treading water a little bit. Do we just end this show and then take Ryan when it does? Is that the way we got to do this? Okay. We're done for the day. You're going to hear Ryan at the podium. After that, Rothman and Ice out at the golf outing, doing good things as only AR does. You have that to look forward to, which is very nice. Bishop and Friends right here.